Good morning and welcome to the Lessard Sam Belcher Heritage Council business meeting for March the 11th. We do have a quorum at this time and are expecting some additional members to be here. We'll move to the approval of the agenda. Motion to approve the agenda. Member Blackburn. Discussion? All those in favor of the motion to approve the agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Agenda is approved. Thank you. We'll move to the minutes of the February 11th meeting of the council. Member Kingston to approve the minutes of the February 11 meeting. Discussion on the motion of the minutes. All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes of February 11th signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried.
Mr. Chairman.
Approved. Thank you. Please, Senator Sack.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to the up on top was the calendar. I was just wondering if there's any changes in the calendar.
No changes with this.
Okay. Just
thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there any members that have a conflict with anything on today's agenda? Hearing none, we'll assume that there are no conflicts of interest on today's agenda. And we'll move to the Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, before we get into the status update, just a couple of things for you. First, the session, of course, you're familiar, it started on the 8th. And we'll go until, that started on the 8th of March, we'll go till the 16th of May. So we're looking at 10 weeks of fast and furious action around here from legislators. And so I'm sure things will be busy. We'll be getting out the legislative updates, weekly updates. Hopefully, we'll get some time and we'll be able to put one of those out today, at least a preliminary. Otherwise, next week, they'll be going in a regular fashion. So one more thing in your packets, there was a handout for you. Was the My Bills portion, or a My Bills printout. And again, we have a My Bills set up on the legislative website. The passcode and the username are on that piece of paper that you have at the bottom. So if you want to get on and take a look at any of the bills, you're certainly welcome to do that. You can probably set up your own My Bills as well if you'd like to keep track of other things. We'll keep on there just bills that are bills and also those that are directly related to or reference other heritage. Besides that, I guess a couple of things. In the agenda or in the minutes, it had mentioned that from the last meeting that we're going to be talking about CPL today. That's not on the agenda. It was moved to the June agenda, so it would give DNR a little more time to look at that, to talk and discuss amongst themselves, review internally what they would like to do, and also give us a chance to review that. I don't want to call it a situation because it's not, but the different viewpoint of whether hunting and fishing and gathering should be allowed on back up. There was a difference of opinion, and you may remember the difference of protocol, maybe on how it was viewed by DNR versus the council. At the last meeting, we talked about that. That's going to be moved on to June, so rather than get too deep in those weeds, June meeting will be Wednesday, just a couple things from appearances. You've expressed an interest before to find out where we are and what we're doing, who we're talking to, kind of things. On the Wednesday the 9th, Joe attended the and presented to a meeting of the Minnesota Land Commissioners. Had a robust discussion with them, which is good. And you can chat with him yourselves if you'd like to get some more input on that. But that's been an annual thing for at least the last 3 or 4 years, I believe. So it's a good opportunity for us to get together with them and chat. On the same day, I attended the legislature put together a One Minnesota Legislative Update, which I was able to attend at the Humphrey School, and that was extremely interesting as well. And then yesterday, Joe and I attended an AIS research update symposium, and the one thing I really should mention is there's a lot of research going on at AIS. This was particularly, actually exclusively with regards to parks and the different species that are based in parks. The thing that you'd be happy to hear is that there's excellent collaboration and communication amongst and between the researchers, all the way from Missouri to Minnesota. That was definitely evident yesterday. So, I know none of you were able to make it, but it's a very interesting update, about a half-a-day report. Bullets and just rapid-fire information coming at us. That is, I think, all that I have right now. So with that, we'll hand it over to Sandy to go through the updates.
Okay, as you know, status updates were due for all programs on February 1st, and I've included a memo in your packet with a spreadsheet that kind of gives percentage spent to date, and also those programs where we've received final reports. As you know, the fee and easement programs for Minnesota Laws of 2013 actually expired this June. And there's a couple of programs where there's some concern because they've got quite a bit of money left in those budget items, and I've outlined them on the memo. But otherwise, everybody appears to be on track and making good progress. So,
questions for Sandy? With regard to updates? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, can you tell me, is one of those that Dakota County with the Granite's property one that potentially is going to expire? Can you just tell us? I'm not seeing it in here, what the ones they are.
Right. So the first project in the memo is the Dakota County. They have money for 2013, $4.1 million. That will be expiring in June. They're also on the agenda this afternoon for a legislative extension of appropriation availability, and they'll be here to present their case for that. They are looking for a 2-year extension.
And then, Mr. Chair, additional follow-up. Now I see the heading above. So Cannon River and Knife River, are they the other ones?
Cannon River is stated, I followed up with the project manager. They're on track for getting their money spent. The Knife River people are having a little bit of issue with line of credit being large enough to get the work done, but they haven't come to us for an advancement or anything. I just wanted to give council members a heads up on that. The evaluating the effectiveness of the AIS prevention strategies, as you know, is a pilot program, and they're working very hard with trying to get that money out the door for that program. And Metro Big Rivers also has a highly desirable property that they've been negotiating for quite some time, and they're planning on using several years' appropriation to acquire that. If that were to fall through, they would be turning back monies to for Minnesota Laws of 13.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just thinking of it in the context of the further down the agenda, the discussion. So at this point, Ms. Smith, it's probably appropriate to think that there is a possibility all this money would be spent or extensions will be requested. So we'd be premature to assume that any of it is coming back to us, absolutely.
I would not make that assumption. With the Dakota County one, of course, it'll be on the agenda there if the council decides to not give them an extension of their appropriation, then that most likely will be turned back.
Member Kingston.
Well, as much as it pains me to acknowledge the pattern that's in here, I think everybody can see the pattern that one of my favorite, I've got a lot of favorites, but And Professor Hoke is here, and maybe we could hear from him, because there's obviously a problem there. And I don't know. I think that the council is fairly understanding, but asking for extensions and late reports is a really bad habit to start getting into and permitting, and then we're part of the problem. And I just think that somewhere we've got to start drawing lines, and we can't let things drag on and on forever, whether it's spending the money or getting reports done, whoever they may be. And I'd like to hear from everybody with a red and a yellow one here, a couple of my favorites. I'd like to know what the problem is.
If they're here, I think we can ask them to come forward.
Yes, hello, council members, especially Member Kingston. I apologize. I emailed Member Wilkins yesterday, or the day before. It's simply a workload and a staffing issue at the moment. I'm currently trying to fill 5 positions and going through the HR process. And I've also had several kind of unexpected projects land on my lap in the last 8 months or so. One of them would be Representative McNamara's roadsides. We've made good progress with Member Wilkins' farming issues. We are going to be realigning the workload within the DNR. We mean no disrespect for the process, for you, for Sandy, etc. It's just, simply a staffing and workload at the moment. We will be realigning those workloads here over the next couple months and addressing this, and we see it as unacceptable as you do. And we deeply apologize.
Thank you. We've got another meeting not until the end of June. Is there any reason to think that all those reds are going to be gone by then, or what would you do if you were on the council?
We have made the commitment that we will have those, the ML10s and the status updates by the end of this month.
End of the month?
Yes.
A couple weeks?
We think we are, we hope that we can do that.
Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, are we talking about the DNR roving crew projects? I just want to be sure I'm on the right project. Mr. Chair and Mr. Hope, can you tell me, do we under current plan and law, is that money not allowed? I know you do some contracting out or rent some equipment that maybe is from different divisions or even different agencies, but are you not allowed to... say it's a specialized effort and you're not able to hire the people currently, can you contract out with contractors to do this work under this plan, or do you need some language change to allow some of this to be done with folks outside of your own forces?
Each one of those appropriations is slightly different as far as the percentage going to the roving crews. We do spend a significant amount of each one of those appropriations, though, specifically hiring contractors. For the very reason that you point out, we do not have all of the specialized equipment tools, and in some cases, staff with the knowledge and experience to run that equipment. A lot of that money is going directly to contractors in the state.
Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Hoke, why have you not contracted more out to make sure that you're on track to utilize this money? Because we're talking about the 2012 money. We've been funding you pretty significantly in years above and beyond that. There's a lot of work on our WMAs that should we be... Do you need more flexibility from us and from the legislature to allow you to contract more out? And that's what I'm wondering.
No, I think we are getting our money spent. I can tell you from conversations I've had with, for instance, some of our staff, some of the staff from the Fish and Wildlife Service, that one of the things we're running into, this is a terrible problem to have, is we're running out of contractors out there. I know I've talked to not a lot, but I've talked, had several conversations over the last couple of years where we actually have projects and we have the money sitting at hand, and we literally do not have enough contractors out there to get the work done in a few cases. We've also had, I've talked to contractors who've said using this money, they are buying more equipment, they are hiring more staff. I think, in many cases, we're doing exactly what we wanted. We are stimulating small business to do habitat work with these dollars. But we do think we are, for each one of those appropriations, we're generally on track to get those spent down and taken care of by the time they will expire.
And last comment, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Holt, just when you're out on the land visiting and hunting and traveling, it's great work you're doing. I don't want to diminish it. And whatever you can do to be on this escalated track, I really believe that what we did in 2008 and passing this amendment, this kind of what you're doing is exactly what it's supposed to be doing. So thank you.
I would just
further questions. Number two.
Thank you. I would just add one final promise that if it isn't cleared up, I won't be recommending funding.
We understand that.
Okay.
Further questions for Mr. Holt? Thank you.
Thank you.
John Snyder. Is Mr. Peter Mott here from Washington County? Okay. We'll be following up with him. Further on Sandy's report, any further questions for Sandy? Member Wilkins.
Thank you. There are some spots that are not marked in red, but to me they are marked in red. Purple, maybe. And that would be the ones that the reports have not been submitted, or maybe they have been submitted, but at such a late time that they haven't been able to be read and approved. And I remember when we first started discussing this lateness issue that that was one of the criteria, is that reports be not only submitted on time, but they're submitted for and approved, because you can submit a report and it's not in a condition to be approved. So, and that we have several spots there, and that starts out with 2009, which all 2009 final reports have been received, except for the one that we were promised last year, and that one apparently is not, is still in draft form. And then we have that particular party again in the next year. It's reported as the money is spent, but the report is not in. And if I don't think I'm mistaken that the reporting has to be also done, or else that's a red flag. Am I correct in that?
Yes, and just so you know, several of these that are submitted, I had a chance to read this week and have been approved now since the duplication of this document. So the Accelerated Forest Wildlife Habitat, the 2010, that was approved by staff. The Prairie Recovery Project, 2011, that's been approved. The Sharp-Tailed Grouse, 2011, that's now been approved. So it just didn't get reflected because we did the duplication before the reports got read.
Then I'm wondering, there is we did call Mr. Holka because there were recurring problems, and it looks like there's still an agency that has recurring problems, then the Bowser agency has not been, they don't have final reports that have been approved.
They do not have final reports that have been submitted, but they have additional restoration dollars that they're still spending. Because they have matching federal funds, they get their appropriation to the extent that federal funds are available.
Can we have a status report on that so we know? Because I recall that Mr. Jasky was here last year saying that, or was it the year before? I think it was last year saying that. That would probably be cleaned up last year, and I'm wondering when it really is going to get cleaned up.
Morning, Mr. Penny.
Morning, I'm Bill Penny, Conservation Easement Section Manager with Bowser. Betty, you're referring to RIM WRP phases 1, 2, and 3. Those, and part of four actually, those all were part of a partnership with NRCS. Bowser has completed everything that we possibly can do up to this point. In phase one, all of the easements have been closed. All of the projects that Bowser has been responsible for doing the restorations on have been completed. We're waiting for NRCS to finish the portions that they are supposed to be doing for restorations. On restoration work in RIM WRPs, the federal government pays 75% of those costs, and we pay 25% of those costs. So we are essentially waiting for them to do their thing so that we can pay that final 25%. This is goes back to one of the issues that I brought up a couple of times, in that the guidance that we've been given in the past is that final reports shall not be submitted and approved until the last dollar is spent. When we find ourselves in these situations with federal partnerships and we have to wait for them to do their thing, we are not able to submit our final report, even though we've done everything that we can except for pay some bills. That's the situation with RIM WRP Phase 1. Phase 2 is also the same. All the easements are closed. As is phase 3, 52 of 61 easements have been closed, and we're waiting on NRCS to do their part on the remainder.
Member Wilkins.
A follow-up question then, please. Thank you, Mr. Penny, for getting caught up on particularly in the Bowser end. I know that's been very difficult, and you've added staff, and it's been a tough go. But when grant hearings are held, we are often, you know, encouraged to give money because the federal government is giving either matching directly at 25%, 50%, maybe the 75% here. And eventually a person gets suspicious, because if this really is taking so very, very long to get done and get those projects on the ground, to me, it seems we should be spending our money elsewhere, even though we're promised all of these matching funds, because we're just simply not getting her done. So when other folks come by, and this is my problem, and it's my problem every time we come to funding, and I look at the projects and I say, now, how soon will this get completed? And we are getting into a conservation mode. You know, the land is ready, everything is going, or it's the restoration is completed. And if we have a partner that is unreliable, should we be continuing, because that's what it sounds like, should we be continuing to even consider that partner in future allocations? Now, the NRCS is the federal government. So in essence, should we be suspicious when those grant applications come around and say, well, we've been burned a few times, maybe we shouldn't maybe it's pie in the sky by and by. So I'm having a real difficult time with this, and you know I'm having a difficult time with this. We've spoken about this a number of times. Because now my mindset is that when I hear people keep on saying, wow, we get all this money from the federal government. Well, and I pay federal taxes, too, so I know it's not free money. But that I'm starting to say, yeah, but is it worth the price? Is it worth the wait? Maybe we should be looking at other types of conservation practices where just the state is involved. I don't know. There appears to be a problem here. And it's starting to become a trust problem for me, just to let you know up front.
I understand. And in the case of RIP-WRP, when we started out, everything worked great. Let's understand what we have succeeded with that partnership. We've done over 500 easements with RIP-WRP, and we've restored over 20,000 acres of wetlands, and we have received significant federal leverage for the state investment. So it was working very well. The wheels kind of came off on the federal side. We did what we could to salvage that, and we have terminated our relationship with NRCS for RIP-WRP. Nonetheless, we have projects that we have been committed to that we need to follow through. If we do not follow through, there's two things that are going to happen. The landowner will lose out, and the land will not get restored. So what we're dealing with here is the tails of something that was successful and for a variety of reasons, tragically, is no longer successful. We're dealing with the tails of that, and we're going to have to continue to deal with that.
Further questions for Mr. Payne? We'll extend our trust a little longer here.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Further on Sandy's report? Mr. Schneider.
Good morning.
Appropriate timing. We have a question with regard to timing on projects. I don't know if he has a question.
John?
Yes.
We're looking at the status reports for past allocations, and we've already run a few of your peers through the mill, and it's your turn. Just wondering why we've got some yellow reports on you, no updated reports since August of last year. It says that a final report will be submitted in mid-March, and is everything, we're almost there? Anything that we should be worried about?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, John Schneider, the Ducks Unlimited. No, absolutely not. We're ready to submit the final report on both those. We have submitted status reports in the past, and I've communicated to staff that we're preparing the final reports now. We had some corrective notice of funding agreement, legal documentation we had to file and report. Had some legal errors in the past, some wording on some NOFAs that we had recorded, and we got those corrected. We're just dotting the I's and crossing the T's in our final report. So there's everything's been reported. Both grants are fully expended, too, and that was previously reported to staff. So there's the work's done, and the money's spent, and the final reports are on their way.
We expect high excellence from DU at all times.
Yes, ma'am.
As usual.
Thank you for that update. If no further, we'll move to the next item on the agenda then, and that's the PILT study, and Michelle Mitchell with Management and Budget. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Council members.
the 2015 legacy bill, the legislature directed Minnesota Management and Budget to consult with Department of Natural Resources, Department of Revenue, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Minnesota Association of Townships to examine the alternative bill payments under statute, including the trust fund approach, with lands acquired with outdoor heritage funds and other dedicated funds, to take into account any ongoing costs to local and state units of government associated with the acquisition of land, to take into account any constitutional constraints, and to submit recommendations to the legislature, the jurisdictions over these areas. There were two meetings held in 2015 to review not only the current system, but the alternative options and develop recommendations to the commissioner of MMB. We used a methodology that examined each approach using five criteria of efficiency, stability, adequacy, equity, and legality. So backing up a step, PILTS, as you know, there's approximately 8.5 million acres of state-owned or at least natural resources lands in Minnesota that receive PILT payments. And in 2015, about 31.4 million was paid to counties, a range of payments depending on how much land were in those counties. And the payments are governed by state statutes and are distributed by statute to county, townships, and school districts. So going back to the study, the scenarios that we reviewed include using a trust fund approach for new acquisitions or prior acquisitions, using the current approach with language and law guaranteeing that will be paid annually, using revenues generated from state of land to be built and provide a general fund appropriation to supplement, or dedicating a new sales tax or portion of existing sales tax charged statewide to pay the bill. The group was unable to come to a consensus on which approach to recommend to the commissioner. The group focused primarily on the current approach, the current payment system, and the trust fund approach for new acquisitions. And there was primarily support for the trust fund approach with the local representatives in the group, and support for continuing with the current payment system by state agencies. And while the group was unable to come to consensus overall, there was all agreed that there needs to be a protection of stability of the PILT program and ensuring that the purposes set out in statutes on that. Taking into consideration the group's recommendations, weighing the pros and cons of each approach, the Commissioner of Management and Budget recommends no changes to the current PILT system. And there are three primary reasons for this. The first is that the current mechanism for funding PILT is one of the most stable in state government. This is an open appropriation. It does not require a biennial appropriations bill to be passed to be appropriated. Instead, the statute allows for sufficient funds to pay for them annually and automatically. Additionally, there, according to the 2010 Office of Legislative Auditors report on natural resources lands, the PILT program is most beneficial to most local governments than local property tax payments would be. And additionally, state agencies are able to implement this program effectively and efficiently. The second primary reason is the PILT program is not unique among other general purpose local aids or other state programs. This program is consistent in structure and funding mechanism with all other local aids. The third primary reason is that alternatives do not sufficiently exceed the current program's administrative efficiency or long-term financial stability to warrant a change to it. And I'd like to highlight here the reasons why. When we were examining the trust fund approach on new acquisitions, we identified several potential drawbacks. First is that it would not preclude the legislature for changing the program to eliminate any potential future one-time payments to the trust after the program's enactment. Additionally, unless the trust fund approach was adopted into the Constitution, the legislature could seek repayments for any funds appropriated to the trust, although it could be construed as a breach of contract, depending on the nature of the program's language. Additionally, a trust fund would be subject to market volatility, and during any recessionary periods, the corpus may not be able to sustain the level of payments necessary to fill the amount from that they would have otherwise received in property taxes. A trust fund approach would also increase the administrative complexity of the program overall and would substantially change the funding mechanism for this local aid in comparison to others. That said, if the trust fund approach is pursued, there are several questions that could be identified that need to be addressed. These questions include examining how much would need to be contributed from each acquisition to ensure long-term stability of the fund, identifying what would happen if insufficient funds were appropriated from the trust, and if, depending on how the trust would be structured, there would be an open appropriation to make sure that all of them would receive the amounts necessary. If the trust contributions were made from the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund, both of which are constitutionally dedicated, how would those payments meet the constitutional purpose of those sources? Another question is how contributions would be tracked and how increased state administrative costs would be paid for. At the end, we considered one portion that may warrant further study by the legislature, and this would be the distribution of co-payments at the local level. So I noted earlier that the OLA report from 2010 noted that the majority of local units of government received higher amounts of money from the PILT payment or from PILT than they would have otherwise received from local property taxes. This is not true, however, for all local governments. And there, from the local representative's perspective, from the group, one of the major benefits of a trust fund approach would be that they would receive exactly the amount that they could otherwise receive from property taxes. However, a trust fund approach is not the only way to address this concern, which is why we recommend that the legislature direct local representatives to further examine the distribution of full payments within the current PILT program to ensure an equitable distribution at the local level. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Member Wilkins.
On page 7 on the PILT distribution, just a bookkeeping kind of a thing. The payment goes to the county, and then it says that the county will transfer over to the township and school districts. I've heard from some folks that, particularly townships, that money doesn't get there. Is there an option that the county does not have to pay townships or school district, or do they have to follow a formula of some type to make certain that those folks have paid?
Mr. Chair, Council Member, I will admit I am not an expert in the PILT distribution. However, the statute does lay out clearly how these PILT payments are to be distributed based on land type.
Thank you.
Further questions? Sure, that's very clear. Thank you. Good report. Oh, Member Kelly.
No, I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, on the executive summary, the last sentence, it says we can explore more details on page 38 of the report. And my report only has 37 pages.
Mr. Chair, Council Member, that seems like a problem, doesn't it? I apologize for that. Mr. Chair, Council Member, the page reference should have been page 36 at the bottom.
Okay.
Starting on the bottom of page 36 and over to page 37.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mitchell, I don't understand in what you were instructed to do from the legislature, where it was an alternative to come back and say you should keep what you currently have. You were instructed to examine alternatives for pill payment, and I don't understand where, and it doesn't surprise me that the study was loaded up with 12 agency people, three from MMB, four from MMB, four from DNR, and four from Department of Revenue. Did you actually do what you were instructed to do?
Mr. Chair, Council Member, we examined alternative payments to PILTS. In order to do so, and in order to provide a good basis for that comparison, we also examined the current approach. And given that the group could not come to consensus, and the group was providing recommendations to the Commissioner and the budget, we feel that we have adequately examined alternatives to PILTS and provided our recommendation to the legislature.
Further questions? Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. If you want to stay, I think your next item on the agenda is also with you. And I'm going to call on Member Blackburn to lead us on the Alta Heritage Fund statement and availability on that February forecast.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had a discussion last time we talked about the forecast about how great it was that we got good news about additional funds, and actually we're just going to keep Michelle over there, and she's going to provide us an update to kind of a reversal of fortune. So I'll just hand it over to her.
Again, the record, Michelle Mitchell with the Assessment Budget. In your packets, you should have a one-pager similar to what you received in November. What this will show you is that there is a decline in sales tax receipts from the November forecast to the February forecast. I will highlight that while there is an overall estimated sales tax decline of just under $6 million in this fund, that sales taxes are still growing just at a lesser rate. Well, what this means for the council is that under the current recommendation of $115,754,000, that the fund is projected to go into deficit if these recommendations are enacted, a deficit of $617,000. So at the bottom of the page, we have outlined what the council recommendation will need to be reduced by in order to hit certain reserve marks. MMB, as I've mentioned before, recommends a 5-10% reserve on the bottom line. And I'll set for any questions you have.
Questions for Ms. Mitchell? Direct to the forecast or the recommendation? It would appear we've got some reallocating to do then. Member, you think of Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mitchell, just a question for you. At the one Minnesota meeting the other day, that the Commissioner and they were talking about the budget and about the forecast. Mm-hmm. At any rate, the point was made, and it was shown in the graphs, that the November forecast is generally more optimistic than it's generally higher and ends up being more optimistic than maybe should be compared to the February forecast, at least in the last 4 or 5 years. Should it be that in November December when we look at the November forecast in the future, is that something we should take into consideration a little bit more, or is that just an anomaly, do you think? And generally the November forecast would be pretty accurate.
Mr. Chair, Director Johnson, while I am not familiar with the information that you received, excuse me, one of what you may be experiencing is that we have a few more months into the fiscal year under our belt by the time we come around to the February forecast. So the information provided to you in November or December each year when the council is making these recommendations is the most up-to-date and current information that we have. The February may provide, it may go up or down depending on what we've experienced up to that date.
Okay, further questions with regard to the forecasting? It appears on the next item on the agenda then, thank you, Mitchell, is the potential allocation reductions. And staff has provided us with some recommendations. Yes, Director Johnson would lead us on that.
Mr. Chair, if I may just give a little bit of background or reiterate the background that's in the memo. The original package the council put together at the October meeting, and that was $111,500,000 that we had an anticipated 5.3% reserve. In November was where we addressed the Marshall Lake issue and took basically $309,000 of that and put it to Marshall Lake, so it would be a full $2 million viable project. And then December was where the final adjustments came, where there was anticipated to be another $3.945 million. Those were added in four different increments. About half of it roughly went to was put to CPL to increase that $1.9 million. And then the remaining $1.9 was divided into three between the they're all listed at the bottom of the middle. Between Minnesota Tribal Limited, Colwater Fisheries, Northern Tallgrass Prairies, and accelerating the WPA waterfowl production area program. In discussion with Representative, let's back up. As it says in the memo, I just want to reiterate that the council's recommendations have already been forwarded to the legislature, and they are in bill form in the House and the Senate as of now. So it's everything is kind of in the hands of the Senate, of the legislature to make changes from here on. So the council's opportunity now is to look at, if you were to make advice to the legislature, what should those reductions be and to what level? Can we go to a 3%, 5%, 10%, whatever, from a reserve standpoint, and where should those reductions take place?
Member Kingston.
Well, I'd like to make a motion that we, in order to address the what was a lack of a projected windfall, that we just go back to where we were in November and that we remove the additional amounts that were recommended to allocate to CPL, TU, Tallgrass Prairie, and accelerating waterfowl. I'd be very reluctant to not give 100% to Marsh Lake, and certainly that does show less than a 5% reserve, but we've never touched the reserve, and I believe that that'll get built up, and I think that would be the fairest solution at this point with respect to recommend to the legislature and keep everything else intact.
Okay, accept your motion, Member Kingston. And as I understand it, it's the four items at the bottom of the agenda item 7 memo from the staff, and that's the $1,974,000 in the CPL program and the $657,000 to the Minnesota Trout Unlimited, the Northern Tallgrass, and the Accelerating Waterfowl Production Area.
That's correct. I'm basically saying let's go back to where we were in November.
Okay. Accept your motion. Discussion. Member Tiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, council. Since how this was a percentage reduction in the forecast, why don't we reduce all of our allocations by 3, 4, or 5% across the board?
Well, I could add to that. It's really hard to adjust every single one of them. It means that there has to be paperwork filed by everybody. Staff can speak more clearly about that, but that's a very difficult exercise. We've talked about this in the past. We've done across-the-board reductions, and that intuitively is a nice, sound way to do things. But when it comes to administration and what all these organizations have set out to do, that means everybody has to go down and rewrite their accomplishment plan. Is that correct? And that's why I don't recommend it at all.
And I think maybe to build on that, I think we might then have to take and have a revote on that, and that would take 9 members to approve that.
To do that whole thing.
To do that process.
Mm-hmm. I think it takes 9 to do this, doesn't it?
Well, no. I think this is just a recommendation to the legislature, and the legislature can certainly do what they want. They have the bill. They have that the council has submitted to them. It's certainly ask if there's a need to have 9 members approve this recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the statute in front of me, but it does talk about recommendations of the council for expenditure, and I think cuts would be similar, that there should be 9 votes for the recommendation. I would, at a minimum, you've already done your official recommendation to the legislature, so this is kind of an addendum or whatever you're making recommendations. I guess I would report the vote, whatever it is, to the legislature. I'm making the recommendation. I don't think it would be illegal to have something less than 9 since you've got your recommendations forward. But to take a vote seriously from this council for making those recommendations to the legislature, I mean, I think a vote of 9 would be good, because it does, the statute does call for recommendations of this group to the legislature to be 9, at least 9 votes. But like I said, as a minimum, I would at least report what the vote was. Among the members, if you can't get to 9, at least if it's 8 or whatever, just make sure that's part of what was forwarded to the members of the legislature.
Thank you. Director Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Mr. Tilley, just a little more background on the administrative, the practical side of having a cut across the board versus surgical. When it's done across the board, the steps the staff will go through is we'll have to contact everyone, the project managers, and to make sure every one of those projects can be a viable project with the reduction, if they may or may not be. At this point, we know that all of them are viable with the monies that are out. We also know that at least the 4 that were added to back in December are viable without those added dollars. And then if they're, however it goes from there, we would contact individuals.
Thank you, Anna. I understand. I hadn't thought of the administrative implications.
Member Sherriff.
Thank you, Chairman Anderson. I would support Member Kingston's suggestion, and it is just a suggestion of adjustments to the legislature. And now, if I was a vindictive person, I would suggest that those who have not spent their money, we ought to take it away from them and solve that problem that way. I'm very irritated by it. I didn't speak up earlier. But it basically takes away, well, when they come here and ask for dollars, you expect that they are prepared to spend it. And obviously, in a couple of cases, they're not. But that said, I think that's the fairest way to proceed.
Further discussion then with regard to the motion to recommend to the legislature that the reduction be made to those programs that are listed in the agenda item 7 memo dated March 11th. Member Blackter?
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, that it's only the 3.945 that are listed, because in the bottom of that memo there are multiple things listed, but I just want to make sure we're absolutely certain that it's only that 3.945.
Yes, in the memo, the last 4 bullets are the final adjustments that we've done. That would be the 3.945.
And I guess the question then, what percent would we be at then?
Slightly over 3.
Between 3 and 4%. Okay. So that would give us a 3% reserve, which is not what MMB is recommending. They're recommending the 5. Member Joey.
Mr. Chairman, council members, I added one more question. Are there cancellations we're expecting in projects that we haven't accounted for yet?
Mr. Chair and members, there are some anticipated cancellations, but in part they are, let me back up. We don't know if there may be cancellations. We're not sure if they will be yet or not. For one, later in the agenda is Dakota County. They're asking for an extension on their time availability for the funds. If that's not granted, then there's a higher likelihood that some of their funds would not be spent by the 30th of June, so they would be returned. How long it takes those dollars to return back and for usability or availability, I'm not sure. My understanding is it takes a little while, but we are not sure yet at this point if those dollars can be returned to them.
Okay, I'm just grasping at straws.
Looking for alternatives. Great. Further discussion? Representative McNamara.
Well, I just wanted to raise the point that there's only 8 of us here.
Yes.
And if we're looking for 9, it might make sense to wait a while and see if one of the other, I believe the 2 members are not available today, but there are 2 members that aren't here yet. I'm wondering, because Mr. Knopf has weighed in, and between him and Ms. Taylor, I'm wondering if we actually have less than 9 votes, if we actually have a recommendation. I think the statute's quite clear that we need 9 votes for a recommendation, and if we pass something with less than 9 votes, I'm not sure. I'm trying to understand, are you saying we can equal recommendations? And I'm not sure that. There's been a history of that these recommendations matter in the legislature, and I'm wondering if we start inkling recommendations, I'm not sure if that's a wise idea.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I would recommend strongly that you try to do it with 9, with at least 9 votes. I think your recommendation to the council is a good one. If there's a possibility to have enough people here to get 9 votes, I would highly recommend it to make sure that it could be considered an official recommendation of the council.
I think Director Johnson has information.
Yeah. I received a text from Representative Lilly. He's at the dentist. He said he'll be late, but he is planning on attending. So, and I think he's anticipating being here fairly soon.
Member Kingston.
I'd like to pounce on him when he walks in, just like we did with John. And just postpone this vote until he gets brought up to speed.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I also wanted to raise the question. Recently it's come to my attention of another situation where non-state-owned land has run into challenges. I take that back. An NGO used funds from this fund, specifically Nature Conservancy in Kitson County, used funds in years to purchase land. And then it ended up getting turned over to the waterfall production area. And it's created a lot of angst in northern Minnesota, specifically in Kitson County. They were not approached ahead of time. I think, and I'm a little nervous because there's only 8 of us here, and I don't want to jeopardize the other 4 weighing in, but I also have to be honest. This bill is before the Environment Committee on Wednesday, and it's been delayed once already, waiting for discussion here. it's important. This is really important money to be spent, but we have got examples over and over of when we have allocated these funds other than to public entities like the state of Minnesota. I'm sorry, specifically, I think when we get beyond the state of Minnesota, with maybe the exclusion of waterfall production areas, we have to ask ourselves, why are we continuing to allocate these state sales tax money to different government entities and NGOs, and we come back over and over, we lose control of what's going on. Kitson County, they've actually now bought two parcels of land, 120 acres each, adjoining state wildlife management areas, and they were put in the waterfall production area program because that was the funds that Nature Conservancy had. The county was not approached, which is required if it's state-owned land. We're required to go and talk to the county and get their approval, or you have to go before the Land Commission, I believe it's called, which is the governor and maybe the Secretary of State and the auditor, whoever it is. There's three statewide officers that can override that decision, and that's only been done a couple times that I'm aware of, or very rarely. I think we should be having a discussion and be allowing the legislature, which needs to look at this. This thing is running into loggerheads in northern Minnesota. We can't have people skirting the intent of the law because they've got this pocket of money and they need to spend it. And I appreciate commissioners, members here questioning, you're not spending it fast enough, get it done. But I think we have to be careful in how fast we send this money out and be more thoughtful. I've got real reservations when we're buying this land with non-state entities and run into problems over and over and over, folks. So I guess I just want to know, the legislature's going to be dealing with it, and I don't think they're going to say yes, okay, again, when we're having the problems, at least in the House. And I wonder what members' thoughts are. I know we're going to wait for Representative Lilly, but I need to know if folks are locked in on this, because I think it's going to become a challenge.
Member Kingston.
Well, I understand the issues, and they're worth talking about, but if this is going to become a state fund, then I think that's really to the state's disadvantage. We all know why we listen to applications and fund different ones, because they all have different strengths and they appeal to different potential deals where the state might not. That's one reason. I don't know exactly what happened in Kitson County, but I think it was an exception. And I don't know if the land that was purchased, that was in question, was purchased with OHF funds in the first place. Do you think it was? Because Nature Conservancy, of course, purchases from their own funds as well. So whether we even have an issue with it, I don't know. But I can't imagine that it's even something that we could consider to make this a monopoly.
Member Blackburn?
I certainly don't know enough about this issue that has just come forward to be able to speak to that particular issue. What I do know is that problems have to be investigated prior to designating solutions. And I wouldn't be on board at any point that I can see without incredible evidence that everything should become a state program. I think that this is the fund that the people pay for, and that the state is not allowed to do all of the things that many of our nonprofits and other organizations do. They don't have some of the support in the community as well. I mean, I've been out in the community, and people won't talk to people that are from the state or the state of Minnesota, but they might talk to Pheasants Forever, or the Fox Lake Gun Club, or whatever it might be. And I think our goal is to get conservation done in whatever means that we can, and there's many avenues to that. if there are problems, we need to correct them. But I don't think it means that there is an automatic only state solution to that. And on this particular issue, I'm definitely interested in learning about it more. And trying to figure out what are those other solutions. Is it that they aren't doing the thing that they're supposed to? Well, then let's talk about that. But it's an awfully big sledgehammer to impose on a problem that might be more of a process or more localized.
Representative McNamara.
Well, and I just want people, I mean, I just became aware of the issue when I was up in the Deep River Falls. And met with the Kitson County people. It is a LaSard Sand Belt Heritage funding issue. I don't think Neil's behind me. He wasn't earlier, and I don't know if anyone's here. I have some documentation about kind of what happened. The reason I'm raising the point, it's not that we should never do it. I want folks to know that there's challenges, specifically when we use NGOs. They can skirt, when we use non-government entities, they can skirt, I believe, the intent of the law in place that if the state agency is going to buy land, they're required to go to the county and have a conversation and get their approval of the project. And if I'm saying that wrong, Ms. Taylor, isn't that basically the intent? If DNR is going to go in, I don't know if it's required to U.S. Fish and Wildlife or not, but if DNR is going to buy a WMA in Kitson County, they're required to go to the county and get county approval. I don't believe they buy it if they don't get county approval, or they go to the Land Commission. I guess I'd want to clarify that. David?
Mr. Chair and members, under existing statute right now, the DNR would be required to get county approval with WMA, SMA, and I think Rim Critical Habitat acquisitions.
In Ms. Taylor, U.S. Fish and Wildlife are not required to go to the county, or is their policy to go to the county? Do we know if their policy is to go to the county?
I'm not aware that there's a requirement, and they may go to the county, just out of goodwill.
Well, and Mr. Chair, my point is, and I think Nature Conservancy in my conversations with them acknowledge that mistakes happen, but I just want folks to know, we have in current law, we are allowing these NGOs to go and not have to go talk to the counties. And I've been one of the biggest proponents of buying public land in Minnesota, and I'm having a harder and harder time when I run into these examples over and over where they willfully see us skirting what is the intent of the law. I'm not saying never do it, because I'm a huge proponent of doing it, but we run into challenges when we have no leverage because it's not the state or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. We now have a great big WMA in two spots in Kitson County where we have a small 120-acre WPA next to it. It makes no sense, folks. It was bought with money from here. And when I have to face county commissioners and they're ready to tar and feather me because I supported funding a program, and, well, that was the money we had in the program and the people wanted to sell the land. It's just not. And now we have separate management here. It's just that we looked. I'm just saying that it could be done better. And I want folks to know that the legislature is going to look at this, and if you've got suggestions, if we're just supposed to look beyond it and say, well, you're dumping $110 million, if some of it gets spent wrong, we don't care. Just look at the list of the bills that I'm trying to dodge in what they want to do. They want to take this money and send it to transportation. They want to exclude, I think, a dozen different projects are listed to be pulled out of here for different reasons, so I'm just trying to bring you to reality.
Member Kingston.
I'm not going to pretend that the problem isn't there. There is a problem, and I think at the root of it is non-pilt. I think that's the biggest driver, but that's neither good nor bad. I also think that it's really good management to always involve all the players right from the very beginning so that they know what's coming. And to the extent that we could make it a policy for everything that we do, I think that would be a wise thing to do. And I would expect a good organization to do that without being told. But if it's happening, I don't have any problem at all with making it a policy that NGOs follow the same kind of requirement to make all communication above board and early to avoid problems like this, so people do know what's going on. I mean, that's just smart managers do that. But I don't think that we can take county by county when we're sitting here in the council. This is a statewide program, and I don't think that we can parcel it out that way. I don't think that's what we're supposed to be doing. And that's an issue that I have with it, because if it becomes so specialized that you've got 87 different formulas that you have to follow, then I don't think that we're doing what the constitutional amendment was supposed to do. It is for the good of the people of the state, but we do have to maintain relationships with all of our partners, and to maintain that good communication with the people whose back door you're talking about, if we're not doing a good enough job there, and to the extent that we can bring a greater pressure on our partners to do that, I would be very much for it. I wouldn't prohibit it. I don't think we have the authority to do that, but I would certainly move towards that direction.
Member Blackburn.
I believe that if standards are imposed on folks, it needs to be actually written down in policy. I don't think that we can hold anybody to something that actually doesn't exist. And so if, in fact, that isn't something that exists, but it needs to be done, we have to fix that if that's the problem. I agree with you that I think a good manager would go out there and talk to the counties, talk to local governments, but it's an expectation, not a requirement. And you know, where you really run into problems is where you set expectations that people aren't going to meet, but then you expect it to be a standard. So I think if there's a problem, we have to fix the problem. But if it's an administrative fix or a policy fix, let's do that. And I don't think that means changing who we fund.
Yep. Member Tilley and then Member Sherrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council members, I would fully support part of our grant agreements, a requirement that they meet with local. Do we want to take it down to the township level, but at least the county levels? As the project is being developed, I would hesitate to give the county's veto power over a project, saying that they have to approve it. But I really, really support a provision in our grant agreements that require everybody to deal with the local county officials at least in an informative way.
Thank you. Member Sherrill.
Well, this issue isn't very new. From South Dakota to North Dakota to Minnesota, county by county, by county commissioners, all oppose public land for wildlife, you name it. And they all have the same excuses. So I'm not going to push any panic button, but I do agree that the NGOs, and I think they're capable of this, they perhaps ought to initiate some local support for these things. There's a lot of people in Kitson County, I'm sure, who are happy to see what's happened there. May not be the county commissioners, but they, other people, are happy that the land is more than just corn and soybeans. So that doesn't solve anything. And I saw this list, Denny, that you're facing, then that's very real. There are a lot of legislators, not a lot, there are some legislators here who don't get it. But I don't think we can, you can't bend to what they're looking for, because they're not looking for anything but corn stalks.
Staff member Smith first.
I just wanted to remind members that we do ask a question in the proposals. will local government approval be sought prior to acquisition? It's a yes, no answer. They have the opportunity to explain their position on that.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commission Member Shara, actually almost all the land we're buying today is with local county approval. DNR goes and talks to these counties. When we're buying it across the state, it's almost always with county approval. And so they are brought in and have a discussion about it. And that's my only point. I don't think we want to skirt the intent of that law. And I think folks would realize it was another mistake up in Kitson County, but it's those black marks. And as much as, Ron, you and I would like to believe, I don't think there's very many people in Kitson County that were gung-ho when this happened. They're upset that they got skirted, and they're, I mean, in those rural counties, those county commissioners are pretty close to what's happening on the landscape and know their people. And so I know it, and it may have been the right idea to buy it, and the county maybe would have approved it if they'd have went and talked to them. I don't know.
Just to echo what Sandy was bringing up, I was going to say the same thing, and it is more of an exception where the county hasn't been talked to ahead of time, and that is, as your counselors know, your responsibility to ask the proposers and find out why that's either happening or not happening when that does happen. But my understanding, and I know we've got some representation from Nature Conservancy, is that they've worked in Kitson County for many years, and they have very strong relationships with them. And I can't speak for TNC, but I would like, as long as they were targeted in this, you know, specific example of something that comes back with a negative tone to it, I think it is important to eliminate all the negative tone we can. And if TNC could talk about it, I'd like to hear from them.
Okay.
Good morning, Rich Johnson, Nature Conservancy. I'm program manager for the Northern Progress Program. And it may be helpful to just give a little more context or information to what Representative Messenger was talking about. In particular, the two parcels in question are up in Swiss County. They were transferred into the National Wildlife Refuge Program. And I'm not the expert on what Fish and Wildlife's requirements are in the law, but they're not under the same requirements as DNR is. However, as this group has been talking about, the key thing is communication. I think the if there was a mistake in communication, we actually were, the county was notified by Fish and Wildlife Service in writing, and that was probably not the right way to handle it, because I think people in those communities really value the conversation. And as follow-up to that, you mentioned Neil Fagan earlier. He's our grassland coordinator for TNC. He went up and met with the Kitson County Board last month and basically explained that I think that communication could have been handled differently. I apologize for that, the way it was communicated. And he's made a commitment to go up and meet with that county board or have a TNC representative meet with that county board annually now. And I think what the county really needed to hear, as members have mentioned, there's a long relationship between TNC and this county. And we have a lot of protected land up there. And I think the county was really reacting to the fact that they have this large land base. TNC owns quite a bit of land up there and actually pays $55,000 a year in property tax up in that county. And I think the county board, that was their immediate concern, was that something was going to happen with this much larger relationship that we have with them. And I think they came out of that meeting, it was a frank meeting, I think they came out of it reassured anyway about what our intentions are as a resident and landowner in that community. So that particular piece, I think, gives you a little more context and information. I know there's a much broader issue about. There's a lot of other things you're wrestling with. Do you have specific questions or follow-ups, Seth?
Questions for Mr. Johnson? Representative Ackerman.
Just to clarify, you went up and talked after you had already, the land had already been bought. You didn't talk to the county ahead of time. It was after you already enrolled it in a program in a WP in a waterfall production area adjoining 2600 WMA. You rolled it in a WPA program that makes no logistic sense at all. because that was the funds you had in a program. And I'm not so sure. I would like to know, and I understand why they're concerned. Was the original intent to leave it in your program, and for whatever reason you changed? You have a great program that pays taxes, and unfortunately you jeopardize what some of us think of that program because of your actions in this parcel. And what I'm not hearing you say is, we screwed up, we did it wrong, we went up and told the county we screwed up. You're talking about you sent some letter that you had WPA send a letter after the fact. And I don't get it. You know, I said at least, at the very least, work with, do a land exchange so it's managed appropriately. And I haven't even heard you address that. We still got white signs next to great big area of yellow signs that makes us all look stupid.
I understand this is something that we could go back. We'd probably do things differently. The communication with the county did happen before the original purchase of the land, and it just was a letter to the county that didn't work its way through their folks to get some people who might have been able to react to it at that time, but that was back in October of 2014 that initial notification was. In the early, you know, as you discussed notification, one of the decisions that was made early on in this program was that Fish and Wildlife Services, the people who will be the long-term stewards of this land and long-term residents in that community, would handle that communication. And so Craig Mowry, the refuge manager up there, did send that letter. The mistake was not actually having face-to-face conversation. I think folks in the counties really appreciate that. They have that relationship with many counties, and we're going to make a real effort to build that relationship with Kitson County in the future. The decision about why that went into one program versus another one, the National Wildlife Refuge, it's different than any of the other refuges you kind of see on the map in Minnesota. It's, you know, because when we think of a traditional wildlife refuge, you draw a line, you say the land within that boundary is going to be protected. The goal of the refuge is to protect the prairie across western Minnesota. The net protection doesn't provide all of it. The statutory limit at that level is 77,000 acres scattered across that whole area. This was representative prairie up in that landscape. I mean, it was a decision to make that portfolio in that refuge more representative. There are probably good management reasons why it was a good fit also with some of the other lands there. And that is something that we would definitely look at again. But also, just it's kind of a minor detail, but the proposal that you just recommended and that you've sent to the legislature, we're not currently working with any landowners in Kitson County. That was an opportunity then. We acted on it. But there's nothing in the current proposal that it's actually in those counties. Additional questions? I know there's a lot of questions.
Can you just clarify that it is a 120-acre parcel, both of them, adjoining multi-thousand-acre WMA? And I'm just thinking of the logic of it. You're trying to say it was Great Prairie. We have Great Prairies and WMAs. Couldn't you have made a phone call to DUPH or DNR and say, you know what, we have a program for prairie and this landowner is willing to sell it to us, but it's adjoining a WMA?
Yeah.
And this is a screw-up that makes it look bad for us, and you're trying to justify and say, well, we're not going to talk to the county and we're going to stay away from them. That's skirting the point. So I just want folks to know that you're saying it fit the program. No, it didn't fit the program. It was not the right place to buy it from. Protecting it may have been the right thing. I'm assuming it was. I mean, the way you skirted around it, did it, somebody must have felt pretty strong. So I want to drop it. I apologize. But all I'm saying is it's one more example when we bring this bill forward, and I'm going to have people saying, why is this entity owning this land when it's just going to cause trouble? This one's adjoining a WMA. I can think of another proposal that's in our current bill that we have moved forward that's got a WMA on three sides of it, and we're proposing to have a different landowner own it. And it's not, the question's not you. That's the reality, folks. And this is some of the best money we're spending in the state, and we're causing trouble for ourselves.
Further questions for Mr. Johnson? Thank you. Member Blackness.
I didn't have a question, but I do have a comment in that, you know, I'm just thinking about the summer tour when we went out, or fall, or whatever it was, and all of the different land ownership that we saw with all the different entities, Fish and Wildlife, DNR, you know, various nonprofits, and it is a patchwork, and that was actually one of the things that was pretty remarkable about it, because not everybody, again, will not every landowner will deal with one particular agency or one particular entity, and each of them had different goals that allowed them to, you know, purchase particular properties versus others that were only allowed to purchase in some properties, and because of that we had a larger footprint. And I think, you know, I understand the situation, but I just want to make sure everybody knows that I think the notification and the conversations have to take place. And in this situation, it sounds like there's some management objectives that aren't going to be obtained because it's inconsistent. But we shouldn't always expect that there's going to be unified ownership in a particular area, because there's sometimes that it's not going to work out. And it sounds like with this one, it should have been done better, and that should have been considered as a for cohesive management. But I just want to make sure we aren't expecting that.
Member Wilkins?
I think probably my main, I really think every non-NGO that works here has been, well, I don't know all of them, but the ones I know, I've really been doing a pretty good job. And I'd like to see that our trust of them continue. The one thing I think that would help on a countywide basis, and in talking to some of our commissioners locally and some other folks in other counties, is that some county commissioners don't like it when there are different rules for different players, so that the DNR is going to eventually get the land, let's say Pheasants Forever or Ducks Unlimited or Nature Conservancy buys it first, and they don't have to follow the same rules. But yet we approve that money knowing full well it's going to be a WMA, and that's what it says actually on the proposal. And so we know that, and the county people certainly know it if they wanted to find it out, that the DNR is going to end up owning it. But yet the DNR rule of having to go to the county first doesn't have to be followed if an NGO buys it. And what county commissioners don't like, that what they call an end run. They just simply don't like it. In talking to a land manager at the DNR, I mentioned to him he was doing a survey, and I said, I think we have to be very careful with counties, because we want to do conservation together. We want to do things with them. And we don't want to do things that affect them that they have no control over. They need to be partners in order for the legacy to continue. So my recommendation on NGOs, and I don't know if you'd want to make it a policy or not, is that if it is going to be going over to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, that you make sure you follow that criteria. If it's going to go to the DNR, you follow state criteria on notification, so that you work with counties. They are your partners from step one. I think that really will pay off in the long run. If you want to make a policy, we could make a policy probably. Otherwise, I'm just hoping NGOs are going to do that. But I see far too many that say, when Sandy indicated, yes, I do read that. And when I read there's not going to be notification, I'm not going to give as much money. That's the only thing I can do at this point in time, because there is no policy.
Senator Sackler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And last evening I was at a reception for the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I was a county commissioner. I left that particular position 14 years ago, and most of my rural northern Minnesota commissioners are still there, or a good percentage. And so none of us are ever very surprised to know that they've got the plat book memorized and know pretty much what's going on here. And Gibson County, of course, is notorious for knowing exactly what's going on. And it's good. I mean, but I guess that's just a reaction I have, and I think that we shouldn't have to. They'll tell us when we make a mistake, and I think we've done a pretty good job. But we put on $100 million a year here, and we're bound to screw up a few times. So, and when we've got the county commissioners looking out for us, we're going to be okay.
Thank you, Member Kingston.
If it's not too much trouble or stepping out of line, I'd like to call for the question and move along.
Well, back to the bill that's before the legislature right now, and the motion that we have is to recommend to the legislature the reduction in the four items that are listed at the bottom of the memo. And Representative Lilly, you came in.
Sorry, I was late.
No, that's very well. But you understand what the
yes,
motion
sir.
Is, then that we're going to recommend it.
Okay.
And it's been recommended to us by Greg and Janelle that we have 9 votes to make that recommendation to the legislature. So, and we have 9 members here present.
Call for roll call.
Roll call is being called for.
Ms. Blackburn.
Yes.
Ms. Kingston.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Senator Saxon.
Yes.
Mr. Sheriff.
Yes.
Mr. Tilley.
Yes.
Ms. Wilkins.
Yes.
Chair Anderson.
Yes.
That's
9
for yes.
Okay, we have 9 for the motion, and the motion carries, and the recommendation will be made to the legislature to consider these for reduction. Thank you. Move to item 8 on the agenda, and staff will discuss revenues.
Mr. Chair, members, this is, as you know, for the last number of meetings, I mentioned that we've been looking at revenues with regards to 97A.056, the statute that we're under. And we're going to let Joe has done some really good work in putting together an excellent memo for you, and he's going to walk you through it. And just to let you know, this is, again, the reason this has come up is really goes back to not us trying to find problems. It's some of the NGOs coming in and saying we'd really like some more guidance. There's some, and as we look into this, it looks like there are maybe some inadequacies or some things that could be done to strengthen the statute. Joe, if you please take it from here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. So today we're going to talk about revenues, and revenues we can maybe synonymous with income at this point. We haven't really defined revenues versus income. I would encourage you to probably consider them the same right now. But what can happen is a recipient can take OHF money, and for whatever reason, whether you're acquiring land and you're in the process of restoring it, sometimes you can lease that property out for farming, so it's doing something, not collecting weeds, while you're getting ready to farm it, or getting ready to restore it. And during that time, you're generating revenue, you're generating income off of that, and that was because of the OHF funding. So OHF funding is allowing recipients to generate revenues, and the issue is how do you deal with the revenue? Should the revenues be treated the same as OHF money? Are there other requirements how that revenue or income should be treated, and so that's what we're trying to do now. You know, there are many recipients have been doing this, and there's seems to be there's a need to have some clarification so that the recipients know that they're okay spending this money or not spending it. They need to make sure they're in line with council expectations, with legal expectations. And then, you know, I think obviously for the council and staff too, we want to know how should it be treated, you know, how should it be reported, should it be reported, those kind of issues. So if we just go down the list here on the memo, you can see in the middle of the page, of the first page, examples of how OHF recipients may or could generate revenue, and obviously there's a lot of, you know, farm leases. So if somebody acquires a property and, you know, let's say it's going to take 2 years to get permits because there's drainage issues on before you can restore the wetlands, well, it makes more sense to just keep farming it and, you know, preparing for the restoration and then, you know, use that blank slate to do the restoration. So obviously they're going to generate revenue from that. Federal farm bill payments, if there's a property, you acquire a property, it's in CRP, and when that property gets transferred, that, that CRP contract has to be transferred to the next landowner, and with those contracts comes a payment, and that's, is that revenue, is that an income? Again, other types of things, timber sales, timber leases, you name it. Any, what we're trying to do is get to a spot where we're considering all revenue and not treating anything different. I mean, as you can see, our current OHF requirements related to revenues, this really only addresses properties that have been acquired with OHF that are going to be transferred to the state of Minnesota. So that's really, in my mind, those are targeting instances where there's nonprofits acquiring land for the DNR. And right now, to me, what it's saying is that the only time that we have to report revenues and give those revenues back to OHF is if you are acquiring land for the DNR. So all of the other things that OHF possibly could fund, there really isn't solid guidance for anyone on how to treat those revenues. And that's why the NGOs are coming to us saying, hey, you know, we're generating revenues and we want to make sure we're doing the right thing with the money. So, I'm, you know, I don't think there's been a time where anybody's doing the wrong thing. We just want to make sure we're all on the same page because it could, you know, potentially be an issue. So there's a few questions that I think the council really should consider before we go down this road of, if you want to create a policy. And, you know, the first question, and I, these are on the bottom of the second page, is does the existing language in our 97A056 adequately address the issues of revenue? So are we okay with only having these requirements for these, you know, specific instances where a state or the property is being transferred to the state, and you have to just report on those few instances. Is it even appropriate to generate revenue from OHF? Should those funds be restricted? A lot of, most of the, actually, I believe the federal requirements that if you take federal money and use that money and generate revenue, that that is now considered federal money, and that there are restrictions that go on those dollars. You know, right now it's really, I don't think we even have a requirement that you have to report on revenue. So, you know, there's an issue there. And so I think, you know, I think it's important that the council looks at it and, you know, knows about this. I think we could follow some of the requirements that, you know, federal guidelines have out there for, you know, grants. And, you know, there's a system in place that allows us to do this. You know, I did some research and I looked through our state, like OMB and different manuals, and trying to find, okay, are there other instances out here of how people are treating revenues with the state. And I could not find anything that was a solid, like, here's a good example that we could use. And so, you know, I think we have some more work to do, but a lot of the NGOs already follow these federal requirements because they are taking federal money. So it wouldn't be anything new for anyone to have to deal with it. They know how to do it. You know, there's accounting and all of those things that go into it, and that wouldn't be anything new. So I think it's important that we look at it. You know, we put in there some potential draft guidance on how to address it. When you get revenues, you can, there's different methods that you can use. You can, let's say your appropriation is for $1 million and you generate $100,000 in revenues. So you can take that $100,000 and add it to the million dollars, so you'd actually have $1.1 million of OHF to spend. You could deduct it from your $1 million, so you could, you know, you'd end up with $900,000 of OHF and, you know, savings. There's just different ways that you can do it. I think, you know, for conservation, it seems that, you know, it makes the most sense to, you know, put as much money out on the land as you can. That would obviously give you more outputs. Another number two here for potential draft guidance, revenues would only be used for direct and necessary costs. So you treat it the exact same way as OHF money, you know, just treat it the exact same. So there's, you don't have to, you know, carry two books or have two different sets of rules. We think it's important that revenue requirements apply to all the OHF recipients, so we're not having to, again, we want to make this across the board and simple for everyone to understand, including council, staff, and the recipients, and that, you know, anything that's left at the end of your appropriation, if we're going to use the additive method, anything that's left at the end would go back to OHF fund to be allocated by the council again. And then the last thing that's very important that we also talked about is intent. And so we do have OHF recipients who actually acquire land, and part of their program is to generate revenue to offset the cost of holding the properties, like TNC, which we talked about, where they're paying property taxes. So if they're, you know, haying their land or, you know, grazing it or something and generate income, we want to make sure that those programs specifically use, you know, that system to, you know, perpetuate the program, that they can still do that. So we would have to develop some methodology or some language within our bill or the 97A or contracts or something that says, you know, yeah, here's our baseline requirements for revenues, but TNC, you have this type of program. This is okay to use revenue this way. And so we just want to make sure that we're not tampering any potential for new projects coming through, different ways of doing it. So there's a few things that I think you should think about. If you look at the back page or the third page, attachment A, this is the federal OMB circular, which is kind of something that the nonprofits have to follow when they're taking grant money. And again, this isn't OHF isn't grant money, it's appropriations, but the concept is still the same. So they are different, but the idea is still the same. So with that, I think we're just looking to get some direction from the council on, you know, is this an issue that we should look at and talk about. You know, there's different options, I think, to address it, but, you know, there is a need, I think, by the nonprofits and everybody just to know, okay, we're okay to do this, and here's how we can spend the money or not spend the money. And that's
what we want. Heather Kingston.
Thank you. I would like to get a list of all of our current projects and how many of them have this sort of activity going on. I want to get some kind of a baseline information for how big this issue is and how much could possibly be involved. And it does tie in with some of the discussions that we've had regarding the call and criteria as to what land uses are going to be permitted project by project or program by program, and tying those things all together. I don't want to make policy recommendations without having real-life situations to tie them to, and going forward, you know, into our next round, I certainly want to make sure that we know about what all these different possible activities on the property might be. I mean, you know, to the extent that activities are going on to maximize the land, to make it a restoration or whatever it might be, we should all be very, you know, conversant in what's going on with each one of these things. But I'd want to get some kind of baseline information, and this is a big deal. I think obviously there are some loopholes or some inequities in policy, and I'm always one for trying to even the playing field and make a consistent policy. But I'd want to at least start with where we're sitting, if it isn't too much of a big deal for staff to show the, you know, the extent of what this, what these questions refer to. And I'd like the discussion to go on for more than one meeting. And I'd like to hear from our partners as to what, you know, what issues they may have with it. Back to the whole idea of talking to people before you do things. I'd like to get more information on it.
Thank you. Member Blackburn.
I think this is going to require a bit more discussion. I need to get my head wrapped around it, and it's not quite there yet. So, but I also think it'll be important for getting information from recipients. Is the revenue generation temporary? For instance, you know, is it a CRP payment that a contract is going to expire? Or is it fundamental to the entire project, like the deer hunters that are looking for that revenue in order to manage the project? I don't know how you do a one-size-fits-all when there are very different program goals and different revenue sources that may be used temporarily or are actually part of the project. And that's going to take a lot of tweezing apart.
Representative McNamara.
Well, I think this is a really good idea to dive in. And there are times like the TNC's program needs that revenue to pay the taxes in that one, or the Deer Hunter proposal like Ms. Blackburn mentioned. I guess I would like it when we come back and visit this, which I'd recommend we do. I think there's a possibility it might be another box on the form, you know, that we're going to have some short-term income or long-term, and is it a significant? I mean, is it X amount of the project? Or maybe staff can make some recommendations on that. I think that would be good. I think another discussion that would be good for this group to have when we have potentially all our members. I've been a fan of sometimes a project, we can maybe there's some significant mineral opportunities there. I think it would be beneficial to know what this group's thoughts are. That it might make economic sense to for instance, use the gravel and then restore the prairie instead of potentially restoring the prairie and then have a heated discussion 5 or 10 years from then when somebody wants to, you know, ruin the prairies, that great prairie. Now we find out, well, this gravel may make sense to take it off and might make more sense on the front end. That'd be interesting to hear what you guys say. That's kind of a big picture thing, but we do deal with that. And so I think it would be good to start.
I think a couple of questions that come to myself is, I heard staff member Fidalgo, you said that maybe we ought to consider a policy, and I guess I'm not sure that I understand what force and effect policy from the council has. So then I wonder if it isn't something that needs to happen legislatively under 97A. Secondly, I guess the time period that might be considered, is there a given time period that this would cover, or does it cover the lifespan of the constitutional amendment? If someone harvests timber 15 years from now, is that money OHF money, or is it for the organization that has the property? So I think those are just some of the questions that I would have. Further discussion about that. Sure. Yes, Director Johnson.
Just a couple of comments quickly. What you just brought up, the very last point, especially, is something we have talked about and thought of, that there is, should there be a sunset sometime on the dollars. And the once the appropriation or once the accomplishment plan, the final accomplishment plan is submitted and accepted, approved, then maybe that is one of those opportunities. But those are just, again, thoughts at this point. The our original thought was this is probably something that has to be looked at by the legislature. And that's so it's not a fix, a quick fix by any means, but it's something. But it's a discussion that had to be opened at some point because of the requests from nonprofits coming in and saying we'd really like more guidance. The federal, if you do get a chance later or whatever, to looking at those that federal, what is it, page 3, attachment A, that seems to be a fairly well accepted procedure on how those funds or regulation of their say requirements on how funds are used within their grants or cash and federal monies. And I guess we're not necessarily looking for a verdict or answer from you at this point other than whether you'd like us to keep looking into this and dive a little deeper. And, I think that would be the most logical step going forward.
Member Chair first and then...
What makes sense to me is what Member Kingston mentioned. I think we should have this back on the agenda, talk to our partners, and possibly then have the council make a recommendation to the legislature on what whatever acts that they might need. I mean, that, to me, we should make a recommendation for sure.
Yeah, and I guess I would just add, you know, that to me, the most important question that I think you want to ask is if you receive OHF money and you generate revenue from that, is it appropriate to use that money in the intent of OHF, or can that recipient use the money and do whatever they want with it? And I think that's the underlying question we're trying to get at is, you know, how should we use those funds?
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question on your last page. You have the LCCMR, and just they're kind of similar, I would guess, to our scenario. And I just want to hear you talk through that a little bit, how that's worked, if they've yielded some income. I have mixed feelings on this myself. I'd like to see it come back to us to decide, but I, at the same time, support ongoing protection of the properties and, you know, the needs, too. So I just don't, you know, you have to balance those things. So just, I'd be curious to hear from staff how the LCCMR is doing it and has done it as they've been down this path, I would imagine, mm-hmm. for years.
Mr. Chair and members, so LCCMR, they're, in speaking with them, they actually don't... their funds don't generate a lot of revenue, and because they do a lot of research type projects and other types of projects that aren't exactly OHF type, you know, the you know, restore, protect, and enhance land type things, that they have other opportunities to generate revenue. And I think it talks about
you know, appears there's might be more patents,
yeah,
royalties
and patents and different things that really I don't think apply here. I mean, they could, but I don't think it's, you know, probable. So I think, you know, that they will look the same. I think the intent is probably the same, but I don't know if we want to follow these rules exactly.
Further discussion? Place this on the agenda. Is June too soon to have the report to the council at that time? Very good. We'll find time for that to occur then and then at the June meeting. Thank you. All right. I think we'll take a 10-minute break this time. Thank you. We'll come back together and move to the agenda item number 9, and that's a comprehensive plan amendment for the
San Hill River Watershed District.
Good morning.
Morning. Thank you, Chair and members. We appreciate the opportunity to come before you again today. We have some good news to report today, thankfully. So, first off, I would like to thank council staff that have worked very hard on helping us navigate through sometimes conflicting state and federal track requirements. They did a phenomenal job of helping us find solutions to some of these problems that have come up with these different requirements. A little background on the project and where we're at. The Watershed District was able to forward funds to Army Corps of Engineers to get the project going last fall, and they did put out for bids. We ended up breaking up the project into two phases. There's four dams that are going to be modified. That's in essence what the project is, four dams to be modified to allow for fish passage. We broke up the project into two phases. The first phase was to put modification of three dams out for contract, out for bid. And we put it out. We didn't know if we'd have, based on the estimates from cost for those three modifications, the Army Corps put it out as for two structures with an option for a third structure. And bids ended up coming in well below estimated cost for the first phase of the project. That has created a bit of a problem with some of the language that was in our amendment request when we forwarded the funds last fall, and that within 1 year of funds being forwarded to Army Corps of Engineers, that receipts needed to be sent to grants administration staff showing all expenses have been spent within that time frame. Since we were unable to allocate all of those funds due to bids coming in below estimates, we will definitely not be able to provide 100% of the reimbursable of those costs from the first phase of the project now. The other kind of relate to that also is that just with the timing, we did not get this out quite as fast as we had hoped, so construction was not able to be initiated this fall, which then caused another delay. And that in winter is an excellent time to do this work in the water, but there needs to be some prep work done prior to that in some of the upland areas, and that was not able to be initiated this fall. So now we have construction restrictions in the summer as well, so we avoid construction periods with fish and swine. So it looks like right now we project that August 1st is when on the water construction will actually be starting. So we will have some expenses to report within that 1 year, but certainly not the full cost that was forwarded to the Army Corps of Engineers. So we have adjusted some of the habitat benefits, some of the budget requests within this amendment. What we'd like to do is, with the balance that has been forwarded to Army Corps of Engineers, is to apply that balance to phase two of the project, which would be modification of the last dam that is in the channelized segment of the San Hill River to achieve the full restoration benefits of this project. This would allow us to put this out for bid soon. We are still working with Army Corps of Engineers. Darren Snyder is here with me from Army Corps of Engineers to answer any questions they may have there. But we're going to be finalizing design and specifications for that fourth structure soon and hope to get that out for bid soon, perhaps even later this spring, with the hope being that there may be some cost savings if the same contractor is interested in bidding it on the phase two of the project. There might be some cost savings and mobilization, and then also some relatively minor cost savings just with the construction oversight if we're able to do the entire project now basically at the same time, even though it's broken up into two phases. With that, I don't know if you have anything to add, Aaron.
I think that's a pretty good summary. In general, like you said, we're targeting the end of April for our advertisement for the next contract. So we'd anticipate a May or June contract award. We'd probably be able to start construction on both phases 1 and 2, which is all four structures here in August. The Corps did set up the separate accounts that were required by the committee before to track all the funding. And we have a way to provide those. We have obligated some of the money from the Corps' perspective. When you commit money, you obligate it. Then you expend it once the construction contract starts. So because the contractor really hasn't been able to move forward because of a later contract award and then the restrictions on working in the river, We won't see a lot of expenditures actually until that contractor starts actually physically moving dirt, but he is under contract and that money is committed to the contractor.
So the amendment that we're looking to have is an extension of
It's an extension of the amendment of the amended accomplishment plan. We're still well within
the
dollars and the time frame that is applied to most grant requirements. There is an additional language added to it last fall when we requested the ability to the watershed district to advance the funds to use for this.
And so the motion that we would be looking for.
The motion before the council is to approve the accomplishment plan amendment as presented.
The extension or the?
The accomplishment plan as presented.
As presented.
Yep. Which includes two different things. The phase, addition of phase two work, and then the receipts required to obtain our contracts management.
Dave? If there's a question. Okay, Member Wilkins?
Could you point out where the phase two work is?
Well, it's reflected in the additional acres that they're going to be accomplishing, approximately like 80 additional acres.
All right. And this originally was just a phase one.
Right, they received money in Minnesota Laws of 2016 for phase two, but they didn't receive the full request. And they will be looking for an advancement on that money as well, which is in the accomplishment plan before the council approval, once session's over.
Okay, thank you.
So the motion would be then to extend the accomplishment plan amendment and including phase two.
Yeah, both pieces are in the accomplishment plan.
If I may add one more thing, we believe there may have been one word missing from the amended accomplishment plan. We anticipate project completion to be November 30th, 2017. That's within the contract, but we know how this construction work on the water sometimes meets unanticipated delays. If there's flooding for 4 months out of the year or something like that, there may be potentially an extension of a few months beyond that. I think it may be beneficial to have that extra word in there anticipated in 2017.
And that's in the plan or in the amendment?
That single word was not in the amendment. And
on page two, third paragraph from the bottom, where it says 60 days of projected anticipated completion. We just need to include anticipated there. And staff has worked with DNR Contracts Management for this specific language so that they're on board with this.
All right. Is there a motion? Member Kingston? Member Kingston moves approval of the extension, the phase two, and the additional word. Discussion on the motion for the extension of the amendment. Hearing none, the chair would call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Extension is approved. Thank you. Item number 10 on the agenda then is the extension of appropriation availability for the Dakota County Habitat Protection and Restoration. And Lisa West.
Dakota County is here to present an extension of a legislative request for the Minnesota Laws of 2013 monies. This program is primarily a fee title and easement acquisition program with the money expiring June of this year. And they, out of the $4.1 million that they were appropriated, they expect to get $132,600. They've been working on several acquisitions of major significance that have not been successful. We've asked Dakota County to respond to their need for an extension and how things will be different moving forward to be able to get the money spent. And I've included that attachment in there here today to answer questions.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair and council members, I think all of you, if not, well, probably most of you, if not all of you, are also familiar with Alzheimer, my manager. We'd just like to provide some brief background on what brought us to this extension request today. The county works on multiple applications, multiple acquisition projects at one time. Currently, our team is working on over 30 projects at various stages, and the Granis acquisition, the easement acquisition, is probably one of our most challenging, and we were looking to spend probably a majority of this 2013 appropriation on that project, but also a large portion of county funding to acquire this project. It's unique, it's valuable, and so appraising it has been exceptionally difficult. We've attempted to appraise the value a few times, and I think in those past attempts, county staff and the landowner have questioned that value. Most recently, we cost shared on an appraisal to try to reach sort of a final value that we thought was reasonable to this property. And not surprisingly, when the easement is eliminating the ability to develop the property residentially or any other development, you can imagine the easement value is quite a large portion of the fee title. And in this case, that was true. The landowners did agree to sell this easement at a slightly lower value than what was appraised at. And so on March 1st, I think that date is incorrect in that memo. On March 1st, we went to the county board in a closed session and discussed and proposed this project at the appraised value price, and the county board's decision was not to move forward with the project as it was proposed. We've been working with the Granis family for a long time. Their first application came in 2009, and there have been a variety of alterations to the project, priority shifts, and mainly at the request of the landowner. And so we've spent a lot of time trying to move forward on this project, and we just haven't been able to complete it. And with this latest county board decision, we are left with very little time. We are still working with the Granis family on a potentially alternative project, but it's not the only project that hasn't evolved the way that we'd hoped. The land acquisition and easement acquisition process can be very rewarding, and it can be very disappointing. And we work with a completely voluntary program, and so it can be very unpredictable. Disagreements on the value, stewardship and maintenance obligations can derail projects. Changes in ownership during the acquisition process. And so the Granis project is the largest one that we've been working on, but there are other projects right now in our queue that are not moving along the way we'd hoped. There are often unforeseen hurdles. And so a lot of those unforeseen changes in projects just continue to delay and extend the time. So the county is requesting a two-year extension to expend its remaining grant funds. That would give the county adequate time to continue to market its programs and target key areas in the county, but also to continue to work with the Granis project, but other projects that are taking a while. An acquisition or land acquisition or easement acquisition project can take sometimes 18 months to complete from application to closing, and that's why we were requesting a two-year extension. The county board wants to provide a broad opportunity
for landowners who are interested in protecting natural areas and natural resources. And they also, though, are wanting to target areas that are important to them for protection. And so the focus going forward would potentially involve those priority areas in the county. We've got unique features and threatened resources, and we would look probably to shifting to some of those areas with this extended amount of time and to areas that have the greatest restoration potential in Dakota County. We appreciate the council's consideration of our request to continue to work on this project and give us this extension of time. And Al and I would be happy to answer questions.
Okay, questions for request? Member Kingston.
Why should we do that and have a 2-year extension as opposed to saying it didn't work out, Ms. Ron, you should come back with a new request? That's what you're asking for. A 2-year extension is a whole different project. And, you know, the progress to date, I don't see any reason why it would change. Willing landowners are a big part of a lot of the program work that we do, and if you don't have one, you don't have one. I say this with reluctance because there are very few great projects in the metro for habitat. So we've always been I've been very keen to hear from Dakota County in the past, and Al will attest to that. But this looks like it ain't going to work. And to have it go on for another 2 years, we talk about 1-year extensions, but 2 years, that's a whole new round.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Kingston, Al Singer, Land Conservation Manager, I can certainly recognize this. We believe that there is a positive outcome on the Grannis project. We're just up against the time right now. What it will require, those of you that may be familiar with the property, there is some agricultural land that's currently being rented to Southeast Asians that the Grannises had wanted to be included in the project. As a result of the board's concerns about that, because this portion of the property is 108 acres, this portion of the property has the least ecological value because of its current cultivated portions. The landowners are now willing to accept that out of the project. And we believe that the county board will be supportive of a reduced project that's going to be less expensive and a little less land as a result. The difficulty is that we're going to have to redo an entire appraisal once again. Because of the cost, it then has to be reviewed by the DNR. The DNR has to go through a bid process to get the reviews. We've been through 4 different really quality appraisers, and the challenge is this is a unique piece of property that's in high demand. We've tried the development approach, we've tried the before and after approach. You just don't have comparables that you can say without any kind of question there are no adjustments that are necessary, and so it is an exceedingly complicated process. The other aspect of it is because these executive home lots within Invergrove Heights are very expensive, and so it reduces the value, so we have an easement that gets to be very close to the fee title value, and we have this nature center component that would provide the public access, and the board is concerned about can we assure that there's going to be adequate public use of this property for this kind of public investment, even recognizing this is not all county funds. And so that's really kind of the challenge that we have with this project, but we believe the landowner is still very willing. We believe the county board is willing to reshape this project so that we can actually get this done, but it's going to require a revised appraisal and review to be able to accomplish that. And we are not going to be able to accomplish that by the end of June.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that, Mr. Singer, can you remind me of the total proposal if the county board would have gotten, I think you would said, I didn't realize, I didn't know what we'd be able to say because they were in executive session. But so they said they did not want to go with it. What was the funding state and county if they would have went on? What were those numbers?
The Mr. Chair and Member McNamara, the county board would have been putting approximately 30% of the value toward the acquisition. We aren't in a position to be able to disclose the full value of the easement at this point in time, but I can say it was a significant portion of our appropriation of Outdoor Heritage Funds, and that about 30% match from the county to achieve this. There is a small landowner donation that's a piece of this as well, but there's significant contributions by the county for making this possible.
Representative McNamara. Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair, this is a tough one. I don't know if the county board, if all those members have seen the property. I'm wondering, I'm not comfortable with a two-year extension. I think that that would be, you know, especially when we're looking at where we're at, I think a shorter-term period, and to see how serious the county is, I think it'd be a real bummer to not lock up all the land. I think the talk about doing a smaller amount is not something that I look to be advantageous. I'm wondering, I guess, so I kind of understand it, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if we had some kind of a shorter extension, but at the same time, can our staff be in contact with the county honoring the executive session and not disclosing appraisals and all that? And if we needed to have, if it ends up it's going to go south and it's going to get turned back, it probably would be good to know that before the end of session if they make headway. But I want to allow the county the flexibility. If they don't, which sounds like might not happen for a while, I'm wondering if we allowed a shorter extension, but yet if we could get some serious conversation between Dakota County and our staff on where we're at and what can potentially happen, and that maybe would allow the county board to realize that this is at least the second significant turn back from my home county, and this board's probably getting a little frustrated, and I want to make sure the county commissioners know that. But this is where it's really cool property. It's unbelievably expensive. And I'm not sure it's appropriate for it to be publicly owned. I don't know exactly. I don't want it to be a DNR WMA, so I had an earlier conversation. That would not be appropriate here. I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if we could find some kind of a shorter time frame, but I think we have to get serious conversation between our staff and Dakota County staff through their commissioners, which can have happen, and find out, is this thing real? Are you going to buy it or not? And if they are, let's get going.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I very much agree with Representative McNamara here. I did have an opportunity a while back to drive around the land. It's an amazing piece of property right close to the metro, and right in the metro, and be really ashamed to lose it. And I think it has to be all of it if we're doing it. I mean, I totally wholeheartedly agree. I am a little uncomfortable with the 2 years. And, I mean, we do have to have some resolution on a shorter time. So I don't know if a 1 year or something, but certainly the two more years is a bit ridiculous. But we need some closure. That's probably healthy for them as well at some point. But really ashamed to lose that property.
Staff Member Smith.
I didn't know if the county could speak to the possibility of getting a purchase agreement by June 30th in 2016.
Mr. Chair and staff member, we don't believe that we can get a purchase agreement
until we get some clarity from the board in terms of what the board is willing to spend on this particular piece of property, and if it does get reduced in size, then the appraised value has to change, and so we would not be able to proceed with the purchase agreement before 2030.
Member Scherer?
I am tending to agree with Member Kingston. It sounds to me, sadly, that the window of opportunity for this property may be closing very fast. It sounds to me like your county board is undecided. It sounds to me like you're possibly making the project different than what came before us. And so I'm tending to think 2 years bothers me too. I'm not sure 1 year would even make that much difference. Perhaps you could find better ways to spend money, maybe not on that piece of property, sadly, but either that or resubmitted as a new project, so we know again what how the money is going to be spent. And I suggest the county board maybe get involved before we get involved.
Member Tilley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an incredibly unique piece of property. It's less than 10 miles from right here. By road, less than 10 miles. This is in a totally undeveloped area. The Dakota County historically has been a very good player in preserving wildlife area. The park system's motto is Forever Wild. The county taxpayers approved a $20 million bond issue to preserve wild natural and farmland in that area, and I think the county portion of this money is the portion of that money, isn't it? Or is that all gone now?
It's all gone now.
Oh. And but there's been an incredible commitment by the county and the people of the county to support these types of projects. This is really complicated by a lot of factors. And if there's any way we can pull this off, it would really, really make a big difference. And I would support modifying the extension to 1 year to give them a chance to do this. They put so much into it, they make them start over again, that would be difficult to do. The landowner, former mayor of Boomer Grove Heights, he's an elderly guy. If he doesn't get this done while he's still with us, that could complicate things. I would really like to give them a chance.
Are you making a motion for a 1 year extension?
I would make the motion for a 1 year extension.
Okay, we have a motion by Member Tilley for a 1 year extension of the Dakota County Habitat Protection Restoration, Phase 4. Discussion on the motion. Member Kingston.
Is this straddling 52 by any chance?
Madam, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Kingston, no, it's on Barnes Avenue, but when you go down Highway 3 or Robert Street straight south, you can see the upper part of the Marcotte Lakes chain of lakes. And so this is actually nestled in a valley a little bit further.
Okay. Well, I'll just reiterate what I said before. You have to get a new appraisal. You're asking for a 2-year extension. The county is not firm on what they want to do. It's a new project. I've supported Dakota County in the past. I can't imagine not supporting you again. But I think you need to go back to the drawing board and come in fresh again. And this kind of extension is not a good way to manage.
Further discussion on the motion. Member Blackburn.
Thank you. And my apologies. I still don't feel like I know enough about this to actually diagnose what's happening here. But, we've had lots of discussions about different organizations that approach landowners for different projects, and some of them maybe are a little bit more acceptable or maybe remove barriers just by the nature of which organization it is. And I'm just wondering, you know, is it, what if it wasn't the county board? What if it was just a, and this is probably just, you know, a mental exercise on my own, but if that landowner wants to do something, isn't there a better way to get it done than possibly going through the Dakota system? I mean, there's lots of other programs available.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Blackburn, Mr. Granis has talked to as many different nonprofit organizations as you could imagine in terms of this. He has talked with Carpenter Nature Center. He's talked with the Dodge Nature Center in terms, because he wants to create an outdoor education facility there. They are interested in managing it, but they're not interested and don't have the resources to protect the land. He's talked with Minnesota Land Trust, the Trust for Public Land, Pheasants Forever, and really the county provides the best avenue for being able to fund this land protection piece as any other agency. And we, in talking to our colleagues, we think they would have the same sorts of issues in terms of coming up with an appraised value that the public can feel is responsible and that the landowners can agree to. And so they would be facing the same sorts of situations as the county has faced.
A follow-up question. So I wasn't one of the people, I wasn't on the council when this project went through, but can you just help me understand something you just said about an outdoor education center?
Mr. Chair and members, Mr. Granis has had a long dream of creating an outdoor skills center, which is already incorporated as a 501c3. It's called the Darvan Acres Environment and Outdoor Skills Center, where he wants to provide opportunities for students and adults to learn outdoor skills, hunting, fishing. He went through a controversial zoning change in the city of Indian Grove Heights to allow the discharge of firearms for a DNR gun safety range, all with the idea of being able to provide these opportunities. He's converted a shed into a classroom. He's hosting classes from Indian Grove Hills Community College and others. He has invested about $80,000 creating a 5-mile trail system and restoring the property. He's done a lot of really spectacular things on the property. And it's a chicken and an egg, because he can't really launch the 501c3 if he doesn't know about how the land is going to be protected. And part of the complicating factors is about half the land is owned jointly with two other cousins. The two other cousins are not enamored with the outdoor education center. They just want to be paid for the highest and best use for the property. And so it becomes a really complicated scenario. The county board has an agreement with the landowner that if this land gets protected, the public will have access to the property from 8 a.m. to dusk, 365 days out of the year, even though it's privately owned. And so that public access piece or public use piece was part of the deal and part of the concerns in terms of the overall funding, because that's often an argument against conservation easements. You put in all of these public funds and the public doesn't have access to the piece of property. The county board was really concerned about that. And so I think that there is a strong consensus of trying to do that. It's finding where that balance is in terms of the board's comfortableness with investing the amount of public funds that it will take to acquire the easement.
I just have a, I'm sorry, and what you did was just create a lot more questions for me, quite frankly, and probably too many to go over right now, but if it's going to go to a nonprofit, that's not privately owned anymore, that's going to be managed by a nonprofit board, and I don't understand still what the relationship is between an outdoor education, and that, the gentleman's done admirable things with his property, but what the outdoor education center has to do with what these funds are going for. And it's probably just because I don't know enough about this project yet.
Member Kingston.
No, you know enough about the project, and we had issues with that from the get-go, and Education Center is not habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. And so Mr. Grannis' dream is admirable, I agree. I mean, I think that's very, very cool, but that's not what we do. So it's a whole different project. It's a whole different timeline. They don't have willing sellers. The county's not behind it. What more do you need, members?
Staff member Belton. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, to be clear, so the council would be approving the amendment to the accomplishment plan that would just further the accomplishment plan. The Grannis project would be a piece of that, and if the county decides to go forward with the Grannis project, that would have to meet all of the requirements within the you know, your project proposal here. So you're not, by approving this, I don't think you're approving the Grannis project in any way, but you're, you know, anything, the county, if they're going to do anything that's, you know, different, like the, you know, Education Center, wherever that is, that would have to be, that would have to come back to the council to look at. So that will be a piece of it if the county decides to go forward with grant.
Well, I'll just reiterate again that it's a whole new project, and what you're saying makes sense, but I don't see any compelling reason to keep extending the timeline. We heard about this 3 years ago. This is March, April, May, June. This is 3 months from the deadline. And it's too late, and I think you should go back to the drawing board and come back, because it may be worthy. It may be very worthy, and I certainly give it a lot of attention. But we've got to start over again. Time's up.
Just Member Wilkins.
Just a clarification. We're on ML 2013, correct? That's the one we're looking at an extension. That's $4,100,000. Now, and I'm hearing some things that may be wrong. Was this when you came to get approval on this particular project, on this particular year, was all that $4,100,000 to be applied to that particular piece of property, or are there other properties, because there's only been $132,000 spent so far. Was that in total, just the one project?
Mr. Chair and members, that appropriation included the Grannis project, but it included for the entire $4.1 million. To give you an example of what Lisa was referring to, we are currently working on a 200-acre acquisition called Hampton Woods, where the county will acquire old-growth woods, convey the property at no cost to the DNR for the establishment of a new wildlife management area. When you do go down Highway 52, if you look off to the right, if you're going south, you'll see this large hill with woods. This is the original woodlots in Dakota County that provided the timber and the fuel for the pioneer settlers. Well, just in that case, we've had an agreement with the landowner. Turns out that the township did not agree to the number of building rights, so we had to go back and reappraise the property. I just met with the estate attorneys today. We think we're going to get that. That's about a $700,000 acquisition. And so this is exemplary of the kinds of challenges that we have as we try to deal with complicated parcels. And so even though it looks like we've only spent $100,000, we have a number of other projects that we believe will be completed by the end of June.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zinger, I really appreciate you and Ms. West's hard work on this, and I understand where the county board's coming from. I'm wondering, first of all, I have a question. Have you, does the county board know how expensive the easement was that Washington County did along the St. Croix? I mean, that easement may have been more per acre than this easement. I'm wondering if you could make sure the county board has that information so that they realize this is not precedent setting. I think, Mr. Chair, we should allow the county board and Mr. Granis to negotiate and stay within the parameters of the current bill, push it forward. I believe there would be an opportunity for you to meet with your executive board during session, schedule an executive committee meeting, and I would prefer you have the authority to grant an extension if you're led to believe. But there's a lot of executive session and private conversations and appraisal. I'm hoping you're getting the message from this group. We did this as that big land educational center habitat, and I understand that many of us have not been there. I visited a couple different times. This is a habitat. But I'm sorry, if you're going to take away all that ag land up on top of the hill, it's not as inviting to me. And that's changing what we originally did. I think Mr. Granis and the county got to go and negotiate hard. We made a huge commitment to Dakota County. I want to honor the commitment, but I want to honor the county board being fiscally responsible. That was part of my that $20 million thing that we did in 2002, I believe it was passed. Is pretty cool, but I'm not in favor, Mr. Chair, at this time of granting an extension, but I want it to be on the record that I'm hopeful if an extension is deemed necessary and Dakota County comes forward during session, that you would convene an executive committee and leave it up to the executive committee to make a decision if they thought that an extension should be granted for Dakota County because it made sense. But I'm personally, I'm not interested in just. They're not gonna take the 27 acres in the middle. That's the lake and stuff. That's gonna get preserved if you build McMansions around it. I'm sorry, I'm just not as interested. And they are, if I'm not mistaken, today taking the DNR gun training class at this on this land with these special new bullets. Maybe the executive director would know, but there's a new 22 bullet that drops off after it goes a few feet. What executive director, you know that bullet I'm talking about?
Subsonics.
They're taking the,
Subsonic.
They're taking the test out there now, and they have a perfect spot to do it. So, and as far as habitat, if you wanted to go deer hunting or turkey hunting, which we would probably have physically challenged hunts out here, it'd be the land you'd want to go on. So I guess, Mr. Chair, I don't know. Maybe we could confirm that you have the ability to call an executive session, executive committee, and decide to grant an extension if it makes sense. But I would prefer that Mr. Granis and the county get really, really serious. I don't make a staff.
Well, the motion by Member Tilley, and I guess I need to
understand. Mr. Chairman, how about if I understand what Representative McNamara is saying here, and I think his solution would be a workable one here. So I will withdraw my motion.
Well, this would be, in your motion that you had before us, would be recommending to the legislature.
Yeah.
To extend the availability of the appropriation. So this would go to the legislature. If his motion passed, because all we're doing is making a recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, so I understand everything here. This grant that has already been recommended by this body and passed into law by the legislature, it expires June 30th. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. So
the recommendation that you were making for a one-year extension would bring that to June 30th of 2017. That goes to the legislature for their
as a recommendation.
This is correct, the kind of stuff.
You know, I'm confused, and I'm willing to accept the recommendation of Representative McNamara, who is probably a little closer than I am.
Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Tilley, you worked for him for, I don't know, 2 or 3 decades. You know, every one of the county commissioners way better than I, including the newest one, Representative, former Representative Holberg, now County Commissioner Holberg. So this is a tough issue. I mean, they're wearing a lot of hats here. I guess... seeing how this is advisory to the legislature, the message I'm trying to send to Mr. Grannis and the county is go in and do, give it another shot, maybe some new information from Washington County that it's not unprecedented what we're paying for this. I'm not interested in a small parcel. I also understand Member Tilley is saying maybe it'll need a little more time. I believe it's Senator Saxhog and Senator Engelbertson are carrying it in the Senate. Representative Lilly and I are carrying the bill in the House. If we have to, somewhere down the line, give it an extension, I think we can do that. But I'm trying to inkle to the county and to Mr. Grannis that
we're serious.
Our patients are waning, especially we just had to find a way to balance this thing, and $4 million is pretty handy.
Yeah. So what's your recommendation, Representative McNamara? Should I withdraw my motion or not?
You're just as good a member of this commission as I am. I forgot your motion was on the table, so I guess I that should think will do, yeah.
I would really like to see this project happen, but I understand it just can't go on forever.
Representative Blackburn, Member Blackburn, excuse me.
Not yet. I would recommend that you withdraw the motion, and I would rather, it is a legislative action, and I'd rather have it very clear what the legislative action that it bears.
Chairman and members, I'm very reluctant to just say we can't make a decision. You know, and I'm going back and forth here, and let the legislature decide, because if we start letting the legislature decide on their own, that's going to continue to happen. I mean, they're good folks.
Senator Saxon.
Well, I think that Representative McNamara had the right idea here. I think probably if Member Tilley was allowed to withdraw his motion, it does put significant pressure on the parties. If they come back then and say they want an extension, we could have an executive board meeting, and as the two representatives say, there's no reason why we can't just add it on as part of the bill. You know, I don't see that as a particular problem. Adding is much easier than subtracting, you know.
To Senator Saxon's point, Mr. Chair, I would hope before we would make a $4 million cancellation that the executive committee would give us a recommendation, which whatever the protocol is, I think you can have that meeting within at least like 10 days of posting and such. So, and we all know that May 20-something is a little ways out. As optimistic that we are that this bill's going to pass in a few weeks, that may be overly optimistic.
Member Blackwell.
I support what Representative Tilley was saying, or what Councilmember Tilley was saying about it is to provide them direction, but I think that is that pathway is a good pathway, that going under an executive committee, because at this point I would not be able to make a recommendation to extend their appropriation unless I saw that there was some actual pressure being applied and some action being taken. Otherwise I couldn't support it. But I need to see that evidence before I could recommend that.
Member Kingston?
So is the motion removed? Is that off the table? Is it retracted?
I would like to modify it.
Because I'm going to make a motion. I'd like that to be cleaned up.
First. Okay, if I withdraw it, I would like to make a motion that this council direct the executive committee to consider an extension on this project if it's warranted.
So is it off the table?
Well,
that's a whole new motion.
Yes.
Yes.
But so
He's withdrawing his motion and
substituting
another motion that the executive committee would make a decision.
This council
before the end of the session.
To
before the end of the session, because it needs to
before
go.
Before he makes another motion, I think I get to make a motion.
And I don't think.
That's
I will draw my motion cleanly, but that's what I'd like to do. Jade's right, she gets a chance.
Okay,
right.
So my motion is to deny it in our council. I don't think we need an executive committee to do so. To deny the recommendation, that's my motion.
The motion is by Member Kingston to deny the extension of the and recommendation to the legislature on the Dakota County Habitat Project. Discussion on that motion? Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, Member Tilley could modify that motion to include the language he just mentioned, just so people know that, right?
I'm confused.
He can amend the motion. He can make a motion to amend it to have the executive committee consider it.
Mr. Chairman, make it clear. I move to amend Jane's amendment. Jane's motion, so that and instead direct the executive committee to have this council direct the executive committee to meet for and make a recommendation for an extension of this grant. Should they deem it feasible.
I don't do that as a friendly amendment. I'd like to call for the vote. Thanks.
Okay. Yep. That's fair. So we'd be voting on my amendment to Jane's motion.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I want to clarify. Member Tilley has not removed the requirement that there be no extension. All he is acknowledging that the board, if for some reason it came along that it wanted to consider an extension, that rather than the legislature just put that in, that we would have an executive committee recommendation on whether they think that's a good idea. This is denial of the county's request for an extension, even with the Tilley Amendment.
Is there
I agree.
Yes. So we would then vote on the amendment first.
And amendment to the motion.
So those members who are in support of the amendment to have the executive committee meet if they see movement with the Dakota County project, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion amendment. Motion carries. Amendment is approved. Then.
Okay, and then we have to vote on the amendment or the motion itself. We just amended
and
the motion.
Correct.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I want to clarify that it would take the county coming forward to Lessard Sams to say, for whatever reason, they feel there's a need to look for an extension. In other words, maybe they've had a closing and they can't close till August, or they're making some headway and they need an extra 30 days or whatever. But it would take the county coming forward to say there's been movement. Otherwise, it's canceled on June 30th.
I guess what I'm unclear, with the adoption of the amendment, I'm not certain that we have to have the motion also approved.
Yes.
Hers is the base.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a technicality, but that's
but her motion is to deny.
Right. But we've amended that motion now.
We've amended it. So now we need to have it. Okay. All right. So all members that are in favor of the motion then to approve the amended motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
You better read it.
Yeah.
You better read it.
Yeah. Well, it's his amendment, basically.
Yeah.
So
it's his, because the motion was amended.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I will restate it.
No, I think that the motion is passed and the motion carries and the chair is the Member Wilkins.
I do believe you have two opposing motions enrolled into the one motion. Yes, one really truly denies, and the other one says no, it's not a denial. Plus, you have until June 30th anyway. So I'm even more confused than what I was before.
Well, the amended motion was to have the executive committee meet if they saw movement or the possibility of a need to extend the project.
So it's a denial with a backdoor possibility.
No, it's a approval of the,
well,
the executive committee. The executive committee having the power to consider this.
And the council denied it, and the council is saying that if Dakota County comes back before June 30th, the executive committee may meet.
And make a recommendation.
And make a recommendation.
Or extending the deadline.
Which they could do anyway.
Well, the June 30 deadline really doesn't mean anything. It's really the legislative deadline. Because whatever the recommendation is that goes forward has to be acted on by the legislature. So what we're recommending is that the extension not be granted unless the executive committee finds there's reason to make recommendations to the legislature that it be extended.
Okay. Item number 11 then is call for funding requests for fiscal year 2018. Executive Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll open this up and then I'm sure there'll be lots of discussion. In your packets, there are actually two attachments to this memo. Attachment B, I'll call first, is actually a cross-out, underline, and insert, so you can see what has been changed, what has been set up. There's been a lot of work put together by many of you council members, mostly council, as well as staff, on reviewing the call, reviewing the requirements for ranking, etc. The attachment B is kind of a printed culmination of what's happened so far. Recommendations from the council work group. So you can see how the changes would be applied to last year, to last year's call. Attachment A is actually the refined version of that, where all the crossouts are taken out, so it would be a draft of the potential bill for the potential call for this year with all those changes made to them. And now, Joe, do you have any comments to bring in at this point? From
Mr. Chair, remember, so attachment A, this is kind of the final product that we're looking. This is the culmination of all the meetings that we've had and discussion. So this is pretty much what would be the final product that would all the applicants would read over, understand the requirements and rules of applying for OHF funds, and then once the council approves this call, then all of the changes that would be necessary for the online application system would be implemented, and that's all based on the actual language and requirements that are approved in this call here. So whatever is approved today will transfer into the online system, and then we'll get the application process rolling.
So motion would be in order then to approve attachment A with the amended changes to the call. Which would include the requirements and the schedule. In technical detail. Is there a motion to? Is there a motion to move forward with the call?
To
motion by Member Kingston to approve the fiscal year 2018 call for funding, allowing the staff to make any technical changes. Further discussion on the motion or the call?
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Councilmember Kingston and all of the staff and all of the folks that helped inform what we decided to put forward, and it was a tremendous amount of work, and I just really appreciate it. That should be recognized, so thank you.
Very good point. Thank you. No further discussion. Chair would call a question. All those in favor of the motion to approve the call request signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried, and the call for funding is will be going out. Thank you. The last item on the agenda is an opportunity to address the council, and their Bob Quady, I'd like to address the council at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bob Quady. I'm a retired forester for the DNR. I retired a couple years ago, worked 34 years for them. In the last half of that in Sherbrooke County and Sandton State Forest. With me is Ron Gertz, a local resident of Sandton State Forest. I did send out some information, hopefully you had a chance to look at that, but I'll quickly review what our concern is today. There is a plan in the Sherbrooke County, Sandton State Forest to convert half of that state forest from forest areas to open landscape management, which would be a combination of prairies, oak savannas, and those types of things. The goal is to protect rare features. The problem is that this plan has not really had local review and input from the public, and we have a lot of concerns with the plan. I listed some of those concerns on the page there, but the main thing is the opportunity to address this conversion process. When we talk to the land managers, they keep saying we have plenty about the cost of this and the effort to do this. They respond, we have plenty of money to do this, which then led me to your group. Because most of the funding for this comes from the SARD-SAMS, as does the adjacent land. A little bit of background, the Sandy State Forest in Sherbrooke County is a 6,000-acre state forest, half of which, 3,000 of which they want to convert. Adjacent to the north of it, is 30,000 acres of Sherbrooke County refuge, the federal refuge, that is five times the amount of land being managed for open landscape management. And I believe some of your SARD money is going to them to do certain projects out on the refuge as well. So that's the reason we're here today, to let know that there is some public concerns about this. There's local concerns. This has been showing concerns at the township level. The county board is showing concerns with this project, and as well as the landlords. We had a meeting in Zimmerman, February 4th, with over 150 people showing up there. Some just wanting to know what's going on, others expressing concerns with it. We plan, locals plan on holding another meeting on March 28th in Big Lake at the school to further clarify some of the issues and to try to get our concerns. Our main thing is to hold the DNR to their mission statement of work with the public in the management of the lands. They have come out at several points and told us what's going to go on out there and the rationales for doing it, but we don't believe that's the intent of the work with. They're just inform us what's happening. We would actually like to get together with them, talk about our concerns, and come up with some joint solutions. But if you follow the money, that's why we're here today. We'd like to ask that before appropriating other funds, there has already been two appropriations, my understanding, over $700,000 to this project specifically for sand dunes. It's always mixed in with the Anoka sand plane phases that are going on. But and I can't speak to the other phases of what's going on in that Anoka sand plane, but this one, Ron and I can speak to pretty succinctly.
Questions?
Yes.
Member Kingston?
Hi, good morning. And thanks for sitting through this session this morning. Thanks for showing up. That's a big part of life.
Very interesting.
Is showing up. And I just, you know, I really respect the fact that you've gotten these groups together and are talking about it. Now, since you were here earlier, you heard about another disconnect where there was maybe a questionable lack of communication. And so much of what's done in our lives is communication. To the extent that some of these monies have already been allocated, it's the, you know, the shutting the barn door after the horse is out. But, you know, the other thing that concerns me is that the council doesn't get too involved in the micromanagement of acceptability or questionability of some of the projects that are done. You know, the constitutional amendment was passed with a majority and it wasn't completely, you know, 100%. So there's going to be a difference in opinion about lots of things that we do. And it's not that we can't listen to that. We should be listening to that. But we also have a very, very rigorous process where projects are presented and programs are presented with experts in the field, and they've done a really good job of substantiating their project and why we've decided to fund it. And so for the good of the whole state is, you know, sort of why we're here at this table. I don't see how we can get into some of these small groups. I really applaud, I don't mean your group is small, that's a big crowd. 150, you said, in Zimmerman?
Yes.
That's a big crowd. And so obviously it struck a nerve there. But I just don't know what we can do at this point, especially for projects that have been approved. Other than back to what we said earlier, to encourage our partners to communicate early and a lot, you know, over-communicate, so that everybody gets a chance to be there at the from the initial stages. Because if there isn't local support, there are problems.
Mr. Chair, members, as I was reading through your applications online, I actually got more involved with looking at your processes. I see there's a lot where you have membership and you encourage joint partnerships and all that. I didn't see anything where they asked, is there local opposition to this project? And I think that is you talked about it during that acquisition component, but this is an acquisition. This is actually through the DNR. Where they these are certified lands they're talking about, where their obligation with their certification is to include, to do exactly what I'm asking today, to include the public in the processes and to have an appeal process during that. They've had none of that with this. I understand, to clarify, I have a DNR employee, I love the DNR.
Yeah.
Wonderful organization, very complicated mission, as you guys have a complicated mission to deal through things. But they do get some things wrong, and we're just asking for that avenue to address when they get something wrong, and we don't see that here. That's why we're here.
So I guess that it would seem to me that it's necessary to get together with the DNR and also the county board. Have you met with them or been before them this issue?
Yes, the county board has come out in opposition to the plan that the DNR has put out. They feel they don't have much say over what the DNR is doing there. And I think you're right. That is our long-term goal, is to interact with the DNR to see if we can get solutions. But they keep telling you there's plenty of money to do this plan, that the follow through with the conversion that they're discussing, and I just look at what they're doing and how they're spending money, and it's frustrating at times. See, that's how they're choosing to spend, when I suspect there's a lot of good projects looking for funding.
It could be that we have a shortcoming here in that we are not requiring those who are making application for the funds to bring them to the public before they... So it could be a very small group of folks, maybe a couple of partner groups that are coming together and making application because they see an opportunity to do a project, but it has not been vetted with the... with the local population.
Mr. Chair, members, I think that is true. I think you're lulled into that concept by the mission statement of the DNR, which says they are going to include the public in that, as well as the certification documents that say there isn't going to be that process. So I understand by the time it comes to you, you presume that that process has been done, especially from DNR. I can't speak for partners what their policies are. So I understand why you don't probably go into the weeds on specificity as a consensus on how wrong this project is. Presumably, they've done that by their mission statement and certification documents. I understand.
Or going to do that.
Hopefully.
Member Scherer.
Well, I would just say appreciate your being here as well. It seems to me your argument is with your local DNR operation there. I think you could understand we can't possibly, on every project, seek out and see who doesn't like it, and we would be here forever. Nothing would happen, and that really is not our charge. You are right. When DNR or anybody else comes before us, we assume that, and they're... they specifically are a public agency, so they must be responsive to the public. And but we're in no position to understand how many people are for this or how many are against it. And so you really have to go. You have to go back to your DNR, and you would know this as well as anybody.
Mr. Chair and members, our intent is to do that. I wanted to bring this specific, because you will start seeing specific things to the San Dunes State Forest come through. So I'm making you aware there's issues there. This isn't a slam dunk. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm curious, what specifically, those folks who oppose this, what specifically don't you like?
Well, right now it's a mixed forest of pine and oak. The plan is to, the pine, much of which was planted through the legislative process, monies from the legislator, the plan is to clear cut, burn, and use chemicals to convert that conifer, old plant forest back to open landscapes. It's the degree, there's 30,000 acres of it adjacent to it. Do we need to take the last 6,000 acre of forest that's being managed as a forest and also add to it? Every group that comes to that Anoka Sand Plain is looking for the same thing. Recreate Oak Savannah. Where's those that want forest there? Now, some of it's in their backyard, no doubt about it. It's the aesthetics, it's the long-term use of the forest that's been managed for 70 years. And I don't know how deep in the weeds you want to get. We can go deeper at some point, but there's a plethora of issues dealing with it. There's trust fund lands mixed in with its issues. There's clear cutting issues. There's chemicals. There's the conversion. There's a multitude of issues mixed in with it. We can go pretty deep in.
I find it, I think historically, sand dunes, historically that land during the Dirty 30s was blowing around, and there was a concerted state effort to grow trees there, pines. So now we've reached the point where now we can take the pines down. We still have the sand, though, don't we?
Well, that just touches on the concern. 70 years ago, you're right, in the 30s, we planted it based on ecological. We planted it to conserve it. Then in the mid-90s, the legislators gave us white pine money so we could plant more white pine. That's an endangered species. We need to encourage white pine. We planted more white pine out there. 20 years later, we're burning out that white pine we planted. As a forester who spent years planting that and treating that, we're burning trees that are 10 years old, 30 years old. It needs a lot of discussion on what's going on out there, in my opinion.
Member Blackburn.
Thank you so much for coming here. And I used to work in Sherwood County. I was a county extension agent. So
nice.
I love the pines and the sand dunes and the oak savanna. But I think, you know, the thing that we learn in ecological management over time is that our management objectives change as the knowledge changes. And one of the things that we've tried to do here, it's already been touched on, is entrust those professionals that are working on it, just as you had been entrusted with your position, to meet the management objectives of each property. And it doesn't always mean that there's going to be agreement, let alone buy-in. And in fact, there may not even be consensus. I mean, we have arguments ourselves, and just to make sure we don't ever have a meeting without mentioning it. We talk about food plots and whether or not that's appropriate, or we say, you know, we need to let the DNR, who are experts in this, manage it because they know what they're doing. And so I have a great sensitivity to the local issues, and that local folks want to have some input and some responsibility and some stewardship and ownership over that resource. But I'm also really struck that this isn't we don't know the particular management objective here and how it's changed over time or what the new management plan might be. And I have a hard time understanding what it is, except for, you know, possibly the other things that have already been said of, you know, hopefully there's some understanding that can be obtained. But I'm at a loss of knowing what else.
Well, March 28th, Big Lake, be there at 6:30. You can learn more than you want to know about the whole issue. Back to Sherwood County. It is too complicated to go in here. There's no question about it. But we have issues with it. We have issues with the funding of it. We want to meet with the DNR to try to figure out some of those issues. And that's all I really wanted to do.
A couple of questions. You said trust lands. Is that school trust lands that are involved in this?
Yes. Out of the 6,000 acres, 1,000 of it is school trust lands. Part of that now is part of the conversion area. We're trying to get some clarification on how that's going to be met with as Prairie or Savannah. There's a process of transferring lands or getting lands transferred out of North Metro into the sand dunes to take the trust obligation from there. The local landowners aren't that excited about having more trust obligations in the forest. So there's a plethora of issues dealing with this project.
And did I understand you to say that the county board has taken opposition to this?
Yes. I understand. Okay. I was not at the meeting. Ron has been involved longer than I have in this issue.
Chair, remember, one of the things I want to mention is that...
Could you... Your name, please?
My name is Ron Gertz.
Thank you.
I live in the Sherburn Sand Dunes. Anyhow, the entire world right now is trying to get the undeveloped countries of the world to quit burning their forests and converting them to grasslands. And yet, in Sherburn County, we have active programs going to deforest the land and burn them back to grasslands, thousands and thousands of acres. And it just seems counterintuitive that we're going against, well, you think like the Paris Accord or the New York Forest Declaration of 2014, where they're paying undeveloped countries of the world to stop burning their forests. Billions of dollars that the developed countries are giving to the undeveloped countries to stop burning their forests. And yet here in Minnesota and Sherburn County, we have our sales tax legacy funds, which are devoted to conservation, being sent up into Sherburn County to cut the forests and burn them back to grasslands. It just can't get my head wrapped around it. So if they come back for more funds, if you can say, let's put a halt on this for a while, I'd certainly appreciate it.
Very good. Forewarned is forearmed. Thank you. Anything further? Any questions further or discussion? Thank you, gentlemen, for coming forward. Anything further to come before the council today? Next meeting is scheduled for June the 29th, I believe. And with that, the council will stand adjourned. Thank you.